understand that. Of course, that might work out for the Iranians,
yes.
But I think that should be first and foremost. Secondly, there have been protests in Iran for many years because the regime is the way it is. And I agree that there needs to be a change because there, you know, so many people have died. But also the guy that they want back, the son of the Shah, Reza Pahlavi, he's been in cahoots with Trump and Netanyahu. And just over the weekend, I don't know if you saw, but Mike Pompeo, who's a former attorney general, who knows quite a bit about, you know, things yes. military-wise and whatnot, he tweeted about how there's Mossad agents in Iran. So there is evidence, and, you know, someone as high up as him has said that this recent wave of protests has been instigated by, and, you know, egged on, and there are people, Israelis, because, you know, geographically Israelis are close,
but that's
chaos so that it presents a reason for Donald Trump to intervene. Because if there was no carnage, if there was no death, then, you know, they don't have legitimacy to go in and liberate, so-called. So I think this is things that...
Reminders of this. And Pompeo has suggested that bringing in mercenaries might be the last best hope of the Iranian regime. But several things can be true at the same time. So... forgive me for going all in on the cliches today, but you can't really let the perfect be the enemy of the good when you're talking about something as complicated currently and historically as this. What about the idea that the massive majority of Iranian people would welcome any change, regardless of who sponsors it or who promotes it or who affects it? Because they can't conceive, in the same way I imagine that Iraqi people 25 years ago couldn't conceive of things being worse than they currently are.
I think the first bit of what you said is right.
Yeah.
The majority probably do want regime change, but the second part is not. I mean, look, Netanyahu's just been in America, right? He was welcomed and he spoke with Trump, and then all this stuff has happened. He is an integral part of this, unfortunately. And we cannot trust him because we know what he's done in Gaza. I mean, if I don't think Iranians will trust...
But these people, these young people on the streets of Tehran are not there at Benjamin Netanyahu's behest. They are there very much in opposition to the current regime. And I can't really conceive of regime change that doesn't take into account geopolitics. And if you take into account geopolitics, you take into account the President of the United States of America, and he currently is somebody who is, for good or for ill, and I, like you, consider it to be very much for ill, in lockstep with the Prime Minister of Israel. So how does Iran get change if not change that involves these people?
That's true, but also we need to look at history, because this exact same thing happened in the 50s before the Shah. Mm. There was a prime minister who was popular, but the U.S. and this is, you
America
know, this
didn't
is what
like,
we make
like him. Yeah.
Yeah, because he was sort of, he challenged oil, you know, Western interests in oil, because he knew that's what they were interested in. And the US and UK did intervene with a coup, supported a coup, and that's when the Shah came in. And the Shah was, you know, their puppet, if you like, and I think he served the rich, the elite, more in Iran.
It's a bit like Cuba. I'm thinking about Batista a lot this year so far in 2026, but the lessons from history are there. What do you want, Charmaine? I'm not clear on what you're actually in favour of.
I, you know, it's like everyone said, it's complicated. And that cliche you said, the better the devil you know,
yes.
I think it might be the case in this respect. But the revolution.
500 people have been murdered on the streets.
I know, it's horrendous. I think it has to be done by the Iranian people. And I just think Donald Trump is not the guy to do it. And I don't know who is. But I just don't think him in cahoots with,
And if it's the only option, if it's the only option on the table, you'd go with the status quo, along with 20% of Iranians who are still in the country.
Perhaps, but I also just think recent history is just too bloody and too just atrocious. We've just witnessed a genocide, and you know, that same person is involved in this. And if Iranians in
I'm not an apologist for Benjamin Netanyahu, but Iran sponsors terrorists who have the destruction of Israel in their DNA, in their credo. You can understand why he would be interested in regime change. I wonder whether you're positing too much influence on what comes next, that he would somehow be able to exercise. Well, actually, I'm not quite clear on what your worst nightmare is in the context of the involvement of Netanyahu and less so Trump, because as you say, his interest is always entirely selfish. What is your worst case scenario in the event of the Ayatollahs being overthrown by forces that include American intervention and arguable Israeli influence over American intervention?
Because we've seen Iraq, we've seen Afghanistan, we've seen Gaza, and
That had nothing to do with the Israeli government. The collapses there had nothing to do with the Israeli government. Well, why do you keep bringing? I'm just interested intellectually why you keep bringing Netanyahu into it,
because he's involved.
So what's your worst case? What worries you most about his involvement?
Firstly, how many people are going to be killed in Iran? It's going to be more than what's happened, like, recently, I'm pretty sure, just based on...
You mean bombs and military intervention, killing civilians?
That. And secondly, they will put up a leader who will be their puppet.
Acceptable, too.
And control the oil, yes. And, of course, and it's going to be another Iraq, and it's going to be... It won't be another Iraq, but it will be as bad as, I think. Iraq is a different country.
Of course.
I just don't have any trust in these people.
You've highlighted the complexity of the situation, I think, completely. And the difficulty and this is going to sound a little bit mealy-mouthed, the difficulty for an outsider to have a strong opinion, which makes me all the more baffled as to how we all ended up so certain of blooming everything in the run-up to the Iraq war. But, you know, Sharmeen speaks directly to that polling from August of last year, showing that this is not a clear-cut consensus, even on the grounds in Iran. I suspect we'll be returning to this topic later in the week and quite possibly later in the day as the President of the United States continues to mull, quotes, very strong, end quotes, military options in Iran. And, it wouldn't be Americans or indeed Brits that would be left dead by that intervention. It's 11:03.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, LBC has been told the government is willing to consider changes to UK terror law to ban Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Ministers are under pressure to move and block any attempt by Iran's leadership regime to seek asylum in the UK. Anti-government protests are now in their third week, with reports of more than 500 people being killed. The American-Israeli journalist Emily Schreider says a media blackout in Iran has only spurred protesters on.
I think the people are truly more determined than ever to actually bring down this regime. Since 2009, we haven't seen this level of brutality against the people. There are reports, people I spoke to, who said that they just opened fire indiscriminately on large groups of people.
A cabinet minister has told LBC that Lord Mandelson should apologise to Jeffrey Epstein's victims for maintaining their friendship. The former UK ambassador to the US has been heavily criticised for declining to do so in an interview. But Peter Mandelson has stressed that he had no knowledge of the late sex offender's crimes when he knew him. Business Secretary Peter Kyle has told LBC that Mr. Mandelson should reconsider.
I don't want to insert myself between the victims and those people who were around Epstein. It doesn't matter whereabouts you were, what the relationship was. Peter Mandelson did express remorse and regret, but I just think every time you're asked to apologise, just do it.
Malaysia and Indonesia have become the first countries to block the AI chatbot Grok, developed by X. Officials say it's being misused to generate sexually explicit and non-consensual images. In the past few minutes, Ofcom has said that it is opening a formal investigation into X. Speaking before that announcement, the Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch told LBC the government should push the regulator to go further.
Social media is a space for adults. It's not a space for children. And rather than banning X or whatever it is that the government is proposing, why don't we just get children out of this space? We don't ask nightclubs to serve orange squash so that the children there can have something to drink. We say no kids in nightclubs. That's what we should be doing here. We need to make sure that children are in spaces that are designed for them, not in adult spaces.
Thousands of people in Kent and parts of Sussex are without water this morning. It's prompted Kent County Council to declare a major incident. South East Water say a number of issues are to blame, including burst pipes, because of the recent cold conditions. And the TV series Adolescence was one of the big winners at the Golden Globes last night. It took home four awards, including prizes for its lead actors, Stephen Graham, Owen Cooper and Erin Doherty. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down five at 10,119. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a dry but breezy day for most. Rain will continue for parts of Scotland with a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks for accountants and bookkeepers. Why? Because having time to advise your clients on how to grow their business
can become tricky.
So new QuickBooks AI gives you tools
to make client collaboration seamless. It's amazing.
I was going to say that. Outdo it with Intuit QuickBooks.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 7 minutes after 11 from Tehran to London, or certainly to the UK, and also some polling that I think is very interesting, although supremely unsurprising. I take no pleasure, as you know, in suggesting that things are going to happen and then being proved right when they happen. I suppose most recently with Elon Musk and Twitter, actually. But there's no pleasure in it. It's a bit like being Cassandra, the prophetess of ancient Greece, who was cursed to always tell the truth and never be believed. So, I don't know, Brexit, Boris Johnson, austerity, Liz Truss, we could go on, and now you've got Donald Trump, you've got Twitter, you've got Elon Musk, all of the things I've warned about have come to pass, and yet the world hasn't really changed at all. And so it is with immigration. I think you probably thought I was mad roughly this time last year when I started telling you that by the time of the next general election, immigration will no longer be an issue, statistically speaking. The direction of traffic under the last Conservative government, and it quickly became clear under the current Labour government, was to sacrifice economic health and basic intelligence upon the altar of nativism. People persuaded that foreigners are the root of all evil, or at least the cause of all of their problems, will be assuaged by the removal of foreigners. I've made a little bit more sense of this recently for myself, because I find it baffling in so many ways. And it is, I think, an example of Keir Starmer thinking that his job is to do what his client wants, not to argue with his client about what is right and what is wrong. It's a complete absence of leadership in many ways. But it is, of course, what you would do if you were bound by the parameters of the legal profession. God forbid that Kemi Badenoch's line about being a lawyer, not a leader, actually has some resonance to it. But it would have some resonance if she wasn't a complete buffoon. So that's what he does. He doesn't actually say to people, look, we could reduce immigration, but it will make everything worse. He says to people, you want immigration reduced? I'll reduce it. And it could be zero by the end of this year. I'll say that again, because if you thought I was bonkers last year when I started telling you that immigration, after years of record highs, was set to be completely deflated, you probably thought I was bonkers. By the end of this year, it could well be zero. You know it could be zero, because even the rabble-rousers and weirdos in the Daily Mail are writing about the possibility of it being zero. Inevitably, they're doing it under the sort of guise of saying, well, it could be zero, but so what? You should still hate Labour. Because, according to their columnist Stephen Glover, the small boats will probably still be going. So people concerned about immigration figures close to a million will not be in any way assuaged or have their minds changed or have their feelings calmed, because the 30 or 40,000 crossing the English Channel in small boats will still be coming. And he's right, by the way. That's how it works. Because the polling in one newspaper today shows most people think it's still going up. A large majority of UK voters believe immigration is increasing, despite sharp falls in the number of people entering the UK. I've got two, and this is by more in common. It's not biased to the right by any stretch of the imagination. Polling is usually reliable, whatever you may think, when you don't like the results. But, of course, the questions that you ask can frame or at least influence some of the answers. Keir Starmer has taken an increasingly hardline stance on immigration. It is, quotes, working, end quotes. Net migration fell by more than two-thirds in the year ending June 2025. 67% of people thought it had risen. This is not a normal country. I don't know whether we trace this back to Brexit, breaking so much of what had once been held sacred, or Boris Johnson riding roughshod over objective reality and observable truth, or our increasingly bent media dedicated to promoting both Brexit and Boris Johnson and left now to try to blame the carnage they've created upon anybody except themselves. But this is not a normal country. Statistics, I mean, basic counting, these are not opinions, show that immigration is plummeting to a point where it could be zero by the end of this year. That's just a fact. This isn't, so I don't believe it, although we're going to move on to the question of why people don't believe it. This isn't speculation or propaganda or any of the things that you might think that it is. This is cold, hard facts. Well, I do quite like saying things like this, but I appreciate it makes me sound like a bit of a hub. But I don't know where else in the media you would have been prepared for this news. I really don't. You can follow individuals on social media who are obsessed with this sort of stuff. There's a brilliant guy called Sundar Katwala who you hear quite often on LBC. I rely on him to know which direction that the traffic is going. But in terms of being told regularly and repeatedly that immigration is plummeting and it could hit zero sooner rather than later, where else would you have heard that in the UK media except on this programme or on the Blue Sky account of people like Sundar and a few others? It's bonkers, that. It's absolutely insane that the thing that British voters can be easily persuaded to care most about is close to not being a thing anymore. 67% of people in the immediate aftermath of seeing a fall of two-thirds are convinced that it is still going up. It's 80% of Nigel Farage voters, inevitably, because he's one of the main reasons why these lies have taken hold, just like the lies about London, which I was planning on talking about this hour, but I've persuaded myself in the course of this introduction that we should talk about the immigration statistics instead. It's the same story, by the way, Mark Rowley hitting out today at false claims about London, the various lords and lady haw-haws, or ha-has, if you're in need of some rather urgent history lessons, who promote and promulgate foreign propaganda, the lies of our enemies about the state of our country and the state of our city, in this case, the safety of London, have, gone unchallenged when the reality, the statistical reality, is clear. The homicide rate in this country has gone down. It's one of the safest in terms of violent crime. Last year showed serious violent crime in the capital plummeting. And even Mark Rowley is now taking aim at commentators, as he calls them, sharing false claims online. President Trump lying about no-go areas. Elon Musk condemned for inflammatory. It's just not true. And that's when things get really scary, historically. You know, we talk a lot about Orwell on this programme. We saw last week the inevitable consequences of what happens when an administration tells you not to believe the evidence of your own eyes and ears. Donald Trump and various cronies watching the same footage that you're watching and describing something completely different when it comes to the killing of Renee Nicole Good. And it continues. All of the research, all of the effort, all of the expertise has gone into demonstrating exactly what did happen, and Donald Trump is still persuaded, or not persuaded, still seeking to persuade you and American voters that something that didn't happen happened. Incredible, really, when you think about it. So, A large majority of UK voters believe that immigration is increasing despite sharp falls in the number of people entering the UK. And when you look at net migration, so when you include the people who are leaving as well, the fall in, overall is two-thirds of what it was in the previous year. I just want you to tell me why, and then crucially, what can we do about it? I may bring the London conversation into it as well, because it's the same thing. Those of us who live in London, those of us who love London, know that it is a city with problems. Of course it is. There are no cities on the planet that don't have problems, but it is a wonderful, arguably the best city in the world. I would, by the way, make that argument, but I'm biased. I live here. I've lived here since I was 19. I would never want to live anywhere else. I love London. I love it in a way that is a little bit... What's the word I want? A little bit too emotional sometimes. I just think that it is a place of such magnificence that I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. And yet when people attack it, I find myself thinking, what is your business? What is your game? And it's the same with immigration, which we will get on to shortly, because in the meantime, I have some breaking news for you. Nadeem Zahawi, his career was an absolute lesson, wasn't it, in... what should we call it? Overpromotion and perceived malfeasance. He's now joined Nigel Farage's outfit. So Nadeem Zahawi becoming the latest failed Tory to join the Reform UK party. You'll probably have to listen to some of his speech at some point in the course of this morning. But frankly, I think Mr. Zahawi has probably delighted voters for long enough. Don't you? What was the tax business? Was that one of the reasons? You look back on Boris Johnson's era in charge. Was Zahawi the one that wrote an article about how Boris Johnson should have another go at being Prime Minister? And it appeared on the Daily Telegraph website, and then they had to take it down after an hour. I can't even remember. But it was tax, right? He claimed that he wasn't being investigated over his tax arrangements, and he was being... But anyway, they're the people that are flocking like flies to... whatever it is that flies gather on when it comes to Nigel Farage and reform. But what I want you to talk to me about is this. You might think this is a stupid question, but remember, I live in a liberal bubble. I also live in London. But why? Why do people believe that immigration is rising when it is falling faster than at any other point in living memory? That's all I want. Why do people believe this? Do they believe that they're being lied to? That the statistics can't be trusted because when they walk out of their house, they see people with different coloured skin from them and don't stop to find out? Listen, it sounds like a stupid question, right? But to me, it's not a stupid question. I follow the news more than is healthy. It's my job, obviously. But how could you be interested in this subject, borderline obsessed by this subject, and be so ignorant of the actual facts? So you find a Nigel Farage voter and you ask them what they care about most, and they say immigration. And yet they are more ignorant about immigration than anybody else in the country. They are measurably more ignorant about immigration than anybody else. 4 in 5 thought immigration had gone up. More than 3 in 5 believed it had gone up significantly. So 63% of people minded to vote for the party that Nadeem Zahawi has just joined think that up is down, black is white, and ignorance is strength. They believe the polar opposite of what is true. And I want you to tell me why. Not just them. It's 67% of the entire population. It's not just the people minded to vote for Farage, the man still not to apologise, yet to apologise to all of the former schoolmates who accuse him of everything from making jokes about the gas chambers to claiming that Hitler was right. Why? If you really cared about immigration, why would you not welcome the news that it's come down? Ooh, is that an even better question? Is that a better question? Let's do both. How can people, particularly people who profess to care so much about a subject, be so demonstrably ignorant of it? 0345 6060973. But the second question is, if you really do care about it, why are you not A, informed, and B, celebrating? The people who genuinely believe that immigration is bad and things will get better when it comes down, is it completely naive of me to suggest that they should be the people who are at the front of the queue for the facts. They should be the people at the front of the queue for the reality. They should be the people going, oh, hurrah. What are they going to do? Just claim that it's all lies? Claim that you can't believe anybody or anything except your own prejudices and your own bigotries? That way Donald Trump lies. Let's get the phone lines open. Two questions. Number one, explain to me why a large majority of UK voters believe immigration is increasing despite the fact that it's plummeting. 0345 6060 973. That's broad. And then specifically, the people who care about it the most turn out to be the most ignorant. Can you explain that to me as well, or instead? You can take one or both of those questions, but I can't wait to find out what you think. Because I've got ideas, but not enough to float a boat. How can it be that the people who should be the most delighted by the reality are the most ignorant of the reality? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco car insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco car insurance.
Find me somebody to love.
You'll love the Dreams Mega Clearance event. Shop now for up to 40% off. Dreams. Love your bed.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
What happens to your Uncle Keith if immigration does drop off a cliff? If it continues to drop? I mean, the people we all know, sadly, they tend not to ring me anymore, but I live in eternal hope, who think that all their problems are caused by immigration and that if you could only reduce immigration, Britain would somehow be better and brilliant, even more brilliant than it already is. And yet, they're getting what they wanted. All their dreams are coming true, and they don't know. It's not that they don't believe it. They genuinely don't know. They don't realise. They don't understand the observable reality. You've got the Daily Mail writing about the likelihood of net migration reaching zero, as some forecasters, I'm quoting from the Daily Mail, as some forecasters are saying could happen as soon as the end of this year. And they're in panic mode. They're going, well, if the small boats are still coming, then nothing matters. Because, of course, they concede that people who believe that immigration is the root of everything that's wrong are liars. You can't claim that net migration, that high, what do they call it, mass uncontrolled immigration is the source of all our problems. If they end mass uncontrolled immigration and you're still angry, this time about refugees and asylum seekers crossing the channel in dinghies. So they know that they're liars, these people, but how can so many people ignore the evidence of their own eyes and ears? Why do people believe that it's going up in a country where it's absolutely plummeting? Sean's in Birmingham. Sean, what do you reckon?
So, just a question to you to start with. What page was that Daily Mail article on?
It's page 16. It's a comment piece. But it's not about the numbers. Well, I mean, it's sort of about the numbers, but it's telling you immediately that even if it reaches net migration, make sure you're still angry. Even if it reaches net zero, make sure you're still angry, says Stephen Glover, because small boats, something, something, small boats.
this is it. Well, there's two points there. I mean, given that migration based on the national polls is the biggest issue in the country, why is that not front page?
Second biggest, actually, after the cost of living. And fascinatingly, and this probably plays into what you're thinking, you ask people what affects them the most, it falls, it plummets down the list, comes in at seventh or eighth. Ask them what affects the country the most, they all say immigration. Yeah. It's weird, that, isn't it? It's part of the answer to the question.
This is it. Well, I look to get left-wing news source, right-wing news source, just to make sure I'm not in an echo chamber.
Yes.
And interestingly enough, you know, these right-wing figures that are always exposed in migration, you're the first person I've heard come across these figures this morning, so quite interested in that. But on top of that, it's the constant point of, look over here, migration bad, look what's happening to our country. Yeah. We all know what the real issues are on this side, but this is the narrative that's thrown out to the people. And whether you're engaged in the news as much as us or otherwise, if the news sources that you are consuming are all of these news sources that just push this...
Are they news sources now, or are they something different? Because if you really...
No, according to the viewers, yes.
You'd look it up, though, right? You'd want to find out what the Office for National Statistics has said. You'd want to find the same people that told you it was 944,000 net plus in the year to March 2023 are the people that will tell you it's 204,000 in the year to June 2025. So you can't have your cake and eat it, can you? If you trust the statistics,
this seems to be what's used. It's trust the statistics when they back up our argument. Otherwise,
yes,
they're all captured by the left. That is the argument that I hear constantly whenever any figures are brought.
So who do you trust? The people that tell me what I want to hear. That's it. They're the only people I trust.
It's sad, but it's sort of nice for some people, I believe, to say all of the issues that you're facing in your life is because of these people over there. Obviously not putting the blame on individuals for the situation they're in, but we all know cost of living, Brexit, but let's not get into Brexit now, but this is what's happening.
So they want to believe that immigration is really high, because if immigration has come down to zero and their own life is still not what they think it should be or what they want it to be, they'd have to find someone else to blame.
Well, you say that. I think that's my worry, that if we do get to zero, where do we go next when things don't improve?
Disabled
and
people,
the British public.
Historic history suggests that...
Well, my worry is, before that, we head towards this. I don't know if you've spoken about this on the radio as of yet, but there's conversations about re-migration at the moment.
Yes.
I don't know. It's very fringe at the moment, but as we know, what starts as fringe, the Tommy Robinson stuff, suddenly becomes mainstream, you know, in what feels like a blink of an eye. So that is my worry as to where it's heading next, is that that's where the conversation
goes. So it's not immigrants, so they're still here. The ones that came before are still here. And of course, if you're in the business of profiting from epic inequality in this country, then the last thing you want is people to start focusing upon the real causes of it. And yeah, you're right. They'll probably start serving up new scapegoats. You're already getting it a little bit, aren't you? Not just under that forced deportation or re-migration rhetoric that Sean refers to, but people suggesting that, for example, Nadine Zahawi can't be British because he was born in Iraq. Or even if he had been born in this country, he would not be permitted to be British or English in the rationale of some of these far-right figures who do seem, as Sean suggests, to be migrating, pardon the pun, ever closer to the mainstream. But why? If you, that's the bit, isn't it? Sean's given us some answers to this, but if it's the thing that you profess to care about the most, how can you care so little about the actual facts? All answers welcome, please. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. It's extraordinary to reflect upon the absence of coverage for these figures. Not just the reality of what is going on, the plummeting in net migration to and from this country, but also the fact simultaneously that a massive majority of people here think it's going up at a rate of knots when it's coming down faster than ever before. We are insane, aren't we? How does this look from the outside as a country? What's that you say? Oh, yeah, they're all obsessed with immigration. Well, it must be pretty high then. No, it just fell by 2/3. What? And they're still obsessed with it. Yeah, they think it's going up. How can you not answer that by simply saying why? How do they think it's still going up when it's actually going down at a rate of knots? Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
The media regulator Ofcom has opened an investigation into X over its AI chatbot, Grok. There are concerns it's being used to create sexual deepfake pictures of women and children on the social media platform. LBC has been told the government is willing to consider changes to UK terror law to ban Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Ministers are under pressure to move and block any attempt by Iran's leadership regime to seek asylum in the UK. And in the past few minutes, the former Conservative Chancellor Nadim Zahawi has announced that he's defected to Reform UK. He says he believes that Nigel Farage has put together a team to deliver for Britain. LBC weather, a dry but breezy day for most, rain for parts of Scotland, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
Another early morning gym session skipped. Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail. But a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a 4-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Check your retirement savings are on track with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor! Party time! Woohoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
Who here hasn't had to pay the Inland Revenue a seven-figure settlement? That's well into the millions in order to settle their own tax affairs after being fired by the Prime Minister from the chairmanship of the Conservative Party for being economical with the actuality. Nadim Zahawi, the latest signing for Reform UK. So I had nearly £5 million quid, the BBC estimated, that he'd paid back after being sacked after an investigation by the ministerial standards commissioner, Laurie Magnus. I've said it before and I'll say it again. You learn nothing from the Boris Johnson experience if you're sticking a few quid on Nigel Farage. And speaking of Nigel Farage, how big a part of the answer to this question is he? Immigration in this country, net migration in this country, is plummeting. So much so that even the Daily Mail posits the possibility of it reaching zero, give or take, by the end of this year. I'd like the idea of you being shocked by that, because I can be simultaneously enjoying the shock that you feel, but also a little bit cross that you clearly haven't been paying enough attention to this programme over the year, the last couple of years, because I've told you this was coming. This has been clear on the horizon for ages, and yet hardly anybody realises. Because, well, reasons. And it goes hand in hand with the news today, the polling from More in Common, that shows 67% of people think it's going up. 63% believe it's gone up significantly. That's your Reform voters, I think, the significantly bit. How is that happening? Because if you really, really cared about it, you should be delighted to learn that it's coming down. And yet, not only do you not know, you believe the opposite of what is true. Nico is in Rustington. Nico, what's going on?
James, I'm kind of in your boat, to be honest. I'm both delighted and saddened by this. Delighted, not that immigration's going down. I'm not someone who's got a problem with that, unlike many, unfortunately. I'm delighted that you were proven right. What I'm saddened by is too many voters' absolute resolution to dig their heels in and not budge on this one.
But this is the bit, and I don't know if I'm sounding naive. I hope I'm not. Because I'm trying to think of the stuff that I care about, right? And arguably, I work a little bit harder to get across. So, you know, to be silly for a minute, Kidderminster Harriers, right? Mm-hmm. I care about Kidderminster Harriers. So if you were to go through my Google search, you would probably see Kidderminster Harriers appearing more than almost anything else, with the possible exception of recipes. So if I really cared about immigration, if immigration was the thing that kept me awake at night, and surely I would be at the front of the queue of people knowing the facts rather than, as this suggests, the very, very back.
So here's my take on that.
Yeah.
People don't like having a mirror held up to them. It's easy to follow the headline of people with different skin complexion, bad, evil. It's easy to put your head in the sand when you've got a viral video like your interview with Nigel Farage, who is openly saying, I have a problem with Romanians living next door to me, and Romanians are people traffickers. That video, I think, has got over 1 million views now.
Is that all?
No, don't pay attention.
It's a drop in the ocean, mate. Seriously, I don't know why we bother. But you're not answering my question. Because if I cared loads about this issue, I'd know more about it than I do about the issues I don't care about. I'm sure I would.
Because people like to attribute blame to something, and it's far easier.
This is why do you hate immigration? You're not answering the question. Sorry, respectfully, because you're plugging my video, so I should be a bit more polite. You're answering the question of why do people hate immigration when they shouldn't? It's something I've dedicated a huge amount of time to over the years, and much of my last book. But that's not the question I'm asking. The question is, if it's something that you really care about, and you do, how can you still be so ignorant of it? They're not in denial of the facts. They are ignorant of the facts.
Why would they clue themselves up when it's been a form of reassurance for so long to blame outside influences instead of looking at our own influences, like 14 years of Tories?
So what does happiness look like?
I mean, I couldn't answer that, James. I'm not in a boat with people who have got a problem with immigration.
No, well, I mean, nor am I.
I make a good living. I'm happy.
That's what the callers are supposed to be doing today, is filling in the gaps for me. So I care. I am, you know, a nativist, immigrant hating. I watch television, and there's black people in the adverts, whether they're immigrants or not. It drives me mad. I hate it. It's disgusting. I hate all of them. And what does happiness look like? At what point do they go, oh, I can relax now and find something else to care about?
Can I introduce you to some of Goebbels' rhetoric and the Great Replacement Theory? Because that's what that sounds like to me.
So I've got that whole idea of even if immigration drops, everything's all... I don't know. But that's not what I'm asking. Again, I'm not asking what do they move on to next. I'm asking why they're still married to the idea that something that's coming down is going up. I genuinely, you're right, Nico. Maybe you either feel it or you don't. And trying to intellectually analyze it is close to impossible. But you know me, if someone tells me something's intellectually impossible, then I persist in proving that it can't be. You know someone like this. Nico doesn't, but you might. I always, a bit unfairly, posit your Uncle Keith on Facebook or your Auntie Doris. Everybody knows somebody like this. Here you go. Adam says, I work with a bloke who's convinced that Sadiq Khan shouldn't be running London and that crime is rampant, even though he hasn't left Sheffield for the last 5 years, and I doubt he's ever been to London. It's all on the social media that he's seeing. So I get that. It's easier to understand how people who never come to London can believe that London is somehow not safe because of videos. And is it the same? Is it that simple? 67% of the population are watching videos on social media instead of actually consulting the Office for National Statistics. So they get angry about the statistics in 2023 when the ONS told us that the figure for net migration stood at 944,000. But they completely ignore the Office for National Statistics in 2025 when the same people deploying the same measures to count tell us that it's come down to 204,000. I genuinely don't get it. John's in Gravesend. John, what do you reckon?
Hello, James.
Hello, John.
First time caller.
You're very welcome.
Hello. I've got a few family members who unfortunately vote Reform, quite ardent, actually.
Okay.
And we often have these arguments where I even try to present evidence to go against the opinions that they're putting forward. And immigration actually came up recently with one of my family members, where I presented the evidence and I was saying, look, the immigration's come down. And they then pivoted to saying, well, even though immigration's come down, the problem is somehow Muslims. They're coming here to take over.
Right.
And I realized that no matter what evidence I put forward, they'll always pivot to something else, because knowing the facts, knowing the reality doesn't really seem to matter to them.
But I'm still in the pre-pivot space, because I get the need to find someone else to other, and, you know, forced deportations are going to become presumably a little bit more popular in this kind of space as we move forward. But I mean, you're going post-pivot, John. I'm still pre-pivot, because I still want to know what's going on in the minds of the people who believe it's going up when it's going down. You and Nico, and I'm sounding a little bit petulant, so I shall wind my neck in a little bit, are telling me what happens to these people when they realise that it's coming down. But what I don't understand this morning is how they can be convinced that it's going up when it's not. And the only measure they had for getting angry in 2023 is the same metric that is telling them in 2026 to calm the heck down. How can they believe the opposite of what is true?
I think it's because they want to.
Yeah.
I think when I was young, most of my family argued about other things. But ever since Brexit, it's always politics.
Yeah.
And immigration's the hot topic. And it's become like entertainment almost to them. Like,
that's interesting.
If you try to bring up the facts, it's like pulling the lever on the train.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you've killed the conversation now, the argument, my emotional high. You know, he's got the statistics, he's got the facts, all boring.
I mean, hate it when I see black people in adverts. Dopamine hit.
Yes, exactly. It's that anger, that feeling of like, oh, there's something really terrible wrong. We need to be angry about it. And that's what it is. It's like, it reminds me of like football teams almost. Because recently me and my brother were talking about the rise of the Green Party. And one of my family members who came over and was like, Reform's still number one in the polls. And it's like, replace Green and Reform with like Arsenal and Chelsea. And it's the same thing. It's like, we're my team.
Yeah. And I mean, the it's not a very substantive theory, is it, footballification? But it fits almost all of the facts. And it involves ignoring the facts. Where do they end up? I know you've answered this, and I've told you off for telling me that they'll move on to Islam or the Great Replacement Theory or forced repatriation. But if are we trying to reason people out of a position they haven't been reasoned into, John? So when you go next Christmas to family members or sooner, and you say, well, look, you said you wanted it to be really low, and now it is. It's zero or close to zero. Should we move on to something else now? They'll just move on to a different kind of, and I'm going to use this word advisedly because it's your family, not mine. They'll move on to a different flavour of racism.
Yes, absolutely. It'll be something else. It'll be something that Trump's done, and they'll be discussing about how what Trump did was actually okay, or, you know, it's whatever the topic is of that week, they will always take this barrage reality,
So what we've got here is, oddly, because it's not the first thought that I had on the subject, but this is an absolute disaster for the current government. Because they've alienated an awful lot of people, not necessarily to the point of not voting for them again, but they've alienated an awful lot of people by lurching into the anti-immigration space, into the unwelcome space, into the sacrifice economic health upon the altar of reducing net migration, presumably in the pursuit of voters who really care about net migration. The people who they think really care, the people they think are up operating logically, don't really exist.
No, the facts, logic, it doesn't matter to them. It's feelings, it's teams, and it's the idea of winning and besting, and, you know, that's what it's been reduced to.
And I guess the more you've spent, the more of your life that you've spent feeling a little bit excluded or ignored or unappreciated, the more likely you are to derive some sort of dopamine hit from simply being part of a movement that is popular. regardless of facts. And that's Brexit for you in a nutshell. And oddly, these architects of Brexit, these people whose promises have come to naught, whose lies are exposed on a daily basis, are still riding this tidal wave of nativist dissatisfaction or unhappiness, and claiming to be patriots when they are routinely putting the country down. I guess maybe there isn't a brilliant catch-all answer to this. A little bit of right-wing media, a little bit of psychological conditioning, a little bit of footballification. It's a bloody disaster, though, for a country. Even with a government that has abandoned many of what seemed to be its principles in opposition and embraced the idea that we just need to bring numbers down regardless of the impact. People want lower migration. We must bring the numbers down. You know, there are now more people dying than being born in this country. So without net migration being in the positives, we actually start shrinking as a population at precisely the point where demographic change will see more and more of us living longer and longer in need of care, in need of other human beings to look after us, and in need of workers paying taxes to subsidise the care that we will need. Not just our pensions, but also, of course, the NHS. And yet, I mean, the exception of Ed Davey and the Green Party that John just referred to, everybody seems to be fighting for the position of having done the most to turn the country, to put the country into reverse. 11:46 is the time, just when you thought things couldn't get any more surreal. The Iraqi refugee and former British Chancellor, Nadeem Zahawi, because I believe that you can be both of those things, has just joined Nigel Farage's party. It's 11:46.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
If you needed any further evidence that this government is way out of its depth, just look at what it decided to do yesterday. With Iran in the position in which it finds itself, with all the events that went on between the United Kingdom, the US and Russia, with Russia supposing almost like shadow ships coming in too close to British waters, with the effective seizing of Maduro in Venezuela, everything else going on in the world, only this government would decide to put out the Transport Secretary to talk about potholes.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Quick question. Well, actually 3, but they are quick. 1. Do you have a car? 2. Are you looking to save on your car insurance? And 3. Do you have a Tesco Club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco Car Insurance. And with 3 levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over 1 million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco Car Insurance.
Live and love to the last breath. This January, fall in love with the passion, drama and heartbreak of the iconic opera that inspired Pretty Woman and Moulin Rouge. Experience the Royal Opera's grand production of La Traviata from the 8th of January to the 17th of February at the Royal Opera House. Get great seats from just £23. Don't miss La Traviata. Book now at rbo.org.uk.
The following is from TfL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled out my name in tea lights. And my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings, next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Beautiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulguthealth.com/radio.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10 to 12. The problem is, well, there's two problems, really. Number one is libel laws. And number two, so many people listen to this programme now that you have to be even more careful than we were when nobody listened to it. So I have to double check on what my memory tells me before I can conclusively share it with you. And I was right. It was Nadeem Zahawi who published an absolutely glowing endorsement of Boris Johnson, wait for it, after Rishi Sunak resigned. So the headline on it in the Daily Telegraph website was, get ready for, I mean, this could have been an unhinged headline, couldn't it? Ready? Get ready for Boris 2.0, the man who will make the Tories and Britain great again, wrote Nadeem Zahawi, who was charged with the Exchequer for 10 minutes under Boris Johnson. He was chairman of the Conservative Party until he had to resign over his own tax affairs and pay nearly £5 million back to the Inland Revenue. He is, you will be unsurprised to learn, no longer an MP. But he has just defected to join Reform UK. So let's go back over that little moment of his ability to spot a winner. Get ready for Boris 2.0, the man who will make the Tories and Britain great again, he wrote, after Johnson had been defenestrated by his own colleagues, after we began to get our head across or our head around just how awful his handling of COVID had been, long after Dominic Cummings had lied about Barnard Castle. And what was particularly interesting about this intervention from Nadeem Zahawi is that it appeared on the Daily Telegraph website at almost exactly the moment that Boris Johnson withdrew from the post-Sunak leadership contest, having established that he had absolutely no prospect whatsoever of, well, the post, was it the post-trust leadership contest? One of the leadership contests, that he had no prospect whatsoever of mustering up the support of enough former or past colleagues. So that's the extent of the guy. Today he's saying that Nigel Farage should be the next Prime Minister of this country. 3 years ago he was saying that the disgraced Boris Johnson should get another go at being Prime Minister of this country. But in an economy of shame, I suppose the less shame you have, the more prominent you can become. Back to immigration and the fact that net migration is at an all-time low. Well, not an all-time low, but it has certainly plummeted further than anyone can remember in the space of the last 2 years, and yet a large majority of the population still believes it's going up. 0345 6060973. Dave's in Hainault. Dave, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. I did check the figures, and I did ask the source that I checked whether those figures included the small boat crossings, and they do. But I think that people are not those people that don't want immigration are not interested in the fact that the figures are coming down. They are only interested in the boats that are coming over. That's all they're interested in. But you can tell them until they're blue in the face and they go, well, no, all the boats are coming over. So that's that, and we need immigration.
So if you ask them how many people do you think are coming over in the boats, and this is missing from the polling, they'd say, oh, about a million or something like that.
Yes, something like that. And, they wouldn't have a clue.
What if that stopped? What if that stopped? What if somehow they did manage to get a handle on this and you know, it went from the low tens of thousands to close to zero?
They'd have to buy the stockpile of rubber dinghies, wouldn't they?
On a more serious note, Dave, I seem to spend my life wondering how you reason people out of positions they haven't been reasoned into. But
That's exactly it. You hit the nail on the head.
Where would they go next?
Where would they go next?
Yeah.
They've done a little...
If they fix the small boats... which they're trying to do. They fixed net migration, oddly. They said they would and they have. They're getting absolutely no credit for it. Massive majority of the population, regardless of what they think about immigration, think it's going up. Yeah. So imagine that they did somehow fix the small boats. What would Stephen Glover be writing about in the Daily Mail today? Even if small boat migration reaches zero, voters will not forgive Labour while... What would it be? I don't know. Well, potholes?
Well, that's another problem, isn't it? The government's come out, with, as you say, with everything else going on in the world, and the headline this morning is potholes. I mean, what the hell?
It's not the headline this morning, but it's also, oddly, one of the things that pops up surprisingly often on the list of things that people really do care about in their own communities. But it's perfectly possible to hold several thoughts in your head at the same time. As Nadeem Zahawi manages to do. Well, who was it? Wasn't there a prominent politician recently who said you should never trust a Tory? Can anyone remember who that was? I can't. It'll come to me in a minute. Thank you, Dave. Matt's in Orpington. Matt, what's going on?
Hi, James. How you doing?
Very well, Matt. What's on your mind?
Something you touched on with, like, somebody four callers ago.
Yeah.
It really resonated with me, and it was... If this is true, and if it's a fact, if it's a statistic that net migration is coming down, including small boat arrivals, who's going to be next on the firing line? Who's next to blame?
Yes.
And it's sent me cold. I'm a gay man.
Right.
And, you know, I'm watching what's happening in the United States of America.
Yeah.
And it's very clear to me that there are those in the UK who actually do want, really want that kind of rigid, violent control they're seeing in the USA. Obviously... Until it hurts, then I'm thinking like Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
Who now is saying...
We're not America. We are different. I know that... And oddly, Trump's approval ratings here are even lower than they are in the United States of America. And it's easy for me to say, with no skin in the game.
I agree with you, James. We aren't the United States of America, and there are fundamental differences between here and there. But the reform, whatever reform will bring, will be just a different kind of America. It will be a UK version, whatever that brings. Mm. And I don't want to find out.
So it would just be the next stage of othering historically goes after gay people.
While I was listening to you, absolutely, I've got a list. Obviously, gay people, disabled women, black British people, Asian British people. Mm. Top of my list would probably be Muslims.
Yeah, that's already happening, isn't it? And that explains the other story that we were going to talk about this hour, but we haven't had time. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner feels compelled to point out the lies that are being told about the city that he polices and the reality of danger and homicide rates. It's kind of scary, actually. Is there any way out of it? I mean, how do you persuade people? I mean, this fear of the pivot anyway, notwithstanding, even if you do persuade people that net migration has plummeted and they believe you, what do they get angry about next is the question you've chosen to answer. But how do you persuade them? If the statistics are being ignored and willfully ignored, how do you persuade people that the thing they profess to really care about is something they don't need to care about as much anymore?
Gosh, that's a very big, deep question. Offer them an alternative would be a great start. I am loving watching Zach Polanski at the moment.
Yeah. I get that. I worry slightly that he might be offering up simplistic or simple answers to complicated questions, but I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon of abusing him just because he's getting popular and appealing to people. But it's more a case of what you do to persuade these people that what they wanted. Because I used to do phone-ins. How do you persuade people that they shouldn't be obsessed with immigration? How do you explain to people that they don't need to blame, or they shouldn't blame immigration for the problems in their own life? And what we normally get was, oh, I don't mean you. This is the mantra that I discovered post-Brexit. Oh, I don't mean you. I've got a real problem with immigration. And people say, well, I'm an immigrant mum, to their mother-in-law. And the mother-in-law says, oh, no, I don't mean you. So I was fascinated by how no one really tries to do that. Zach Polanski and Ed Davey notwithstanding. But nobody... realistically and with a chance of winning the last general election, does anything, or perhaps the next one, does anything to try to persuade people not to care so much about it. So you've accepted that people really, really care about it, and now you can't even persuade them that they should care about it less, because the problem they perceive, I put problem in quotes, is considerably smaller than it was when they decided that they were going to care about it a lot. It's a strange one. It's coming up to 12 noon. I'm not quite sure what we're going to do next. There's part of me that wants to continue with this or maybe bring London into it, but we've got the whole of 2026 in front of us, and in fact, before the next general election, we've got the whole of 2027 and the whole of 2028 as well, quite possibly. So I might turn your attention back to young people, screens, and social media.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Ofcom says it's investigating X over concerns its Grok AI chatbot is being used to make sexual pictures of women and children. The media regulator is looking into whether users are being protected and if illegal content is being taken down quickly enough. The technology secretary is also expected to address MPs about the issue later. The Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has told LBC they would ban under-16s from accessing social media if they come to power.
I'm not saying this is going to solve all of the problems. It's not. We are realistic. What we want to do is move a critical mass of children off social media. That helps with the peer pressure. Lots of children and parents who don't want it feel pressured into it because of what everybody else is doing. A lot of children are suffering from depression, anxiety, they're distracted, and companies shouldn't be profiting from that.
X's owner, Elon Musk, has previously said that controls have been tightened following concerns about Grok. Human rights activists in Iran say 500 people have now been killed in anti-regime protests in recent weeks. President Trump says Iranian leaders have contacted the US to negotiate. He's threatened military action over the crackdown on demonstrators. The former Conservative Chancellor Nadim Zahawi has defected to Reform UK. He held the role for 2 months under Boris Johnson and served as a government minister until 2023. Mr. Zahawi is the most senior of the former Conservative MPs to have joined Reform. In a speech to Reform supporters, he says he believes Nigel Farage has put a team together to deliver for Britain.
If you don't yet realise that Britain needs reform, you know in your heart of hearts that our wonderful country is sick. How many of you at home have thought to yourselves that nothing works today? I know I have, and I have it a damn sight easier than most people. That is why I'm standing here today as the newest member of Reform UK.
London has recorded its lowest number of murders in more than a decade. There were 97 killings last year. That's down 11% from the 109 reported in 2024. And a major incident has been declared in Kent as thousands remain without water. Last month, 24,000 people experienced outages for several days. South East Water said the latest issue, impacting 11 postcode areas, is due to the recent cold weather causing pipes to burst. Bottled water stations have been opened for those without supply. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 1 point at £10,123. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a dry but breezy afternoon for most. Rain continuing for parts of Scotland, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12 is the time. Listen, social media ain't going anywhere, is it? So we may well return to that story a little later in the day. But I know it's Monday, not Friday, and this is at the shallower end of the day's news. But there are two stories that sit rather happily together, I think, in conjunction today. There's a BBC panorama on the way in which employees, vets themselves, tell the programme makers that they feel under increasing pressure to make money for the big companies that employ them. and that they are increasingly worried about the costly financial impact on pet owners. That you know what the other subject is, don't you, that I think feels identical to this one? It's funerals. I said this to you last time we talked about vet prices, because it felt very similar, just on one level, to when I had, for the first time in my life, and so far, thank goodness, only time in my life, I had to arrange a funeral. And I was taken aback by the costs, which was fine, but obviously, but also by the psychological pressure. I'm not by nature a haggler. I used to work in retail. Oh, speaking of which, a big hello to I have a magnificent shop. Talking about how much I love London a moment ago, I like nothing more than strolling around the old East, you know, the city, around the Bank of England and St. Paul's and down there. And I've got this obsession with, I was about to say I've got this obsession with squinting, but you'd think I'd finally taken leave of my senses. I've got a slight obsession with a vista, a view, that if you squint a bit, would not have changed for 200 years. And, you know, like on the Shambles in York or something like that, and various other places as well. But in the city of London, when you get away from the big skyscrapers, from the shards and the walkie-talkies and the cheese graters or whatever they're called, you go down a little alleyway around the back of Lombard Street, and you could be in a Charles Dickens novel. That the view and the angles and the shop fronts and the windows could have been exactly the same 150, 200 years ago. And there's quite a few, and you know I have a, you wouldn't know it from looking at me, obviously, these days, but in my days when I was a little bit more presentable, I used to look very smart when I presented Newsnight. I think we can all agree about that. But when I worked in menswear, I used to love clothes and schmutter and cloth. And I went to see a beautiful little shop in the city of London, stumbled across it, called McCangus and Wainwright. And Dan was in there, who can make you a suit. There are people who can make you a suit with scissors and a bolt of cloth and a needle and thread. I often think what will happen to us come the revolution, and you need actual skills that can't be learned. Anyway, it's a beautiful, beautiful shop, and thank you to Dan and to Richard for making me feel so welcome when I just went in like a tourist to have a little look around. So I digress slightly, but the funeral vet crossover is psychological as well as financial, because the reason I mentioned haggling was because when I worked at Aquascutum, when I worked in menswear, with one of the lads at McAngus and Wainwright, when I worked in menswear, I didn't like hagglers. You'd always, if that didn't happen very, very often, but I'd say one in 50. Maybe customers would say, is that the final offer? You're in a shop with labels on it, and it's obviously not my shop. I'm just a shop assistant. But we did have a degree of discretion. The longer I worked there, the more discretion I had. You know, if somebody asked for a discount, we could generally reach 5% without getting permission off a manager, and they'd go up to 10%. I can tell you this now, because the company no longer exists. You could go up to 10% if you got the manager to sign off on it. So if someone was spending an awful lot of money, I don't know what you do next, though. Do you threaten to walk away? We did a vicuna overcoat for, I think, the best part of £15,000. And this is 30-odd years ago. £15,000 for a coat. I sold one to Ronnie Wood, would you believe, out of the Rolling Stones. I was on commission as well, so I didn't forget that day in a hurry. But what do you do if someone says, it's 15 grand there, get 10% off or I'm walking away? Anyway, I'm talking about haggling as something I'm not comfortable doing, but there are many scenarios in which haggling is expected, right? If you're buying a car, I think you usually have a little bit of a haggle. If you go to the souk, if you go to the market in Marrakesh, you will offend the stallholders, I was told by my guide, if you don't try to haggle. So even if you're very bad at haggling, it is culturally expected that you will haggle a bit. Otherwise, the person you're buying a carpet off might be offended. The two places where you would not haggle are in a funeral parlour and a vet surgery. Well, maybe in a private health scenario as well. I've never had that for humans. I've had it for my dog, but not for the, and my cat, but never for the human. So I suggested to you some time ago that something very rum was going on when it came to vets' bills, because they just seemed to suddenly become unconscionably high. We've had cats for the best part of 20 years, and this investigation by Panorama shows prices have gone up by 63% between 2016 and 2023. So I was absolutely right. I mean, I was saying to Mrs. O'Brien that we didn't used to pay that much. Our cats, happily, have been pretty healthy over the years. But if you need to get the cat chipped, I've got one cat that's so old, we need to get him re-chipped. Because he no longer, the chip must have just conked out. Has it got a battery in it or something like that? It does, so he's not activating the cat flap. I have to let him in by hand. He just sits there waiting by the front door. Anyway, I knew. And because I don't know whether or not it's sort of been one of those things that in our marriage that Mrs. O'Brien takes a little bit more responsibility for the animals than I do. So it wouldn't be a criticism of how much it costs. But you know, sometimes if my wife says to me, God, that's expensive, and I think that it's a criticism of me, I say to her, God, the vet's expensive, and she'll think it's a criticism. It's not a criticism of her. I'm just pointing out that the vet is really expensive, and I'm going to pay the money anyway. If I told you that I don't know if I should. Did I tell you this last time we talked about vets? When our dog needed some fairly serious surgery, I did Google amputation. Because you see quite a few dogs going around with three legs, don't you? Sometimes they have a little wheel, and they seem perfectly happy. Does a dog even know if it's only got three legs? Does it have that level of consciousness to know that it's a leg down on the original deal? But to be fair, amputation's not cheap, and you can't sort of do that sort of thing yourself, obviously. So I still don't know exactly how much it cost to fix our dog's leg. And I have made a decision that I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I am ignorant to this day of how much it cost. But I could probably get myself a couple of nice suits from some of London's finest menswear bespoke purveyors for what it costs to fix my dog's leg. It's not cheap. And it's true. I was right that the figures have gone up. And the reason I tie it in with funerals is, I hope, obvious. It's because of love. And it's because of this strange psychological process by which the level of love that we have, I think, makes us less and less likely to question the cost or to haggle. So the funeral I had to arrange was for my late father, and I would have felt almost guilty if I had haggled or complained about the cost. This is a failing on my part, by the way, because it would have felt as if I was somehow cheapening his passing. So they say that'll be 10 grand, and I say, oh, can't you do it for 8? And I'd almost, and my dad would approve of that. He's from Yorkshire. But I would have felt as if it was, I almost wanted to pay more to show how much I loved him. Does that make me sound stupid? Oh, I'm going to get emotional now. Does that make me sound stupid? I want to pay more. I'd like to pay £1 million for my father's funeral, please, because I really love him. It's why you do the stuff with the horses and the plumes and the carriages and the bouquet, because you're demonstrating a level of love. And the only way you can articulate that is through the lavishness of the funeral. It's such a waste of money. But somehow it's not. I think something similar happens at the vets. I think you go to the vet and they say, that'll be £5,000, please. And you say, pardon? And if you say, oh, I'm not paying that, then somehow you love your pet less. Or you somehow feel as if you're diluting your own love for the pet. So it's a coincidence that these two stories appeared on the same day. But one newspaper, a couple of newspapers report today that a couple have cancelled their wedding 4 months out from the big day because they're expecting a 20 grand vet's bill to treat their 4-year-old black Labrador, Gus, who has got cancer, I think. There are two stories in the news today that I might start doing this in 2026 as a semi-regular feature. There are two stories in the news today that I respond to completely differently, having had therapy, compared to how I would have responded to them before I had therapy. I am a poster boy for therapy, by the way, but I do sometimes look back on myself and think, what was wrong with you, mate? So the homeschooling story would have really got my goat back in the day, and I'd have been quite arrogant about it and quite obnoxious, and I'd have been like, it's just stupid parents, selfish parents who want to homeschool their own children. What's wrong with this? One day I'll dig into why on earth I'd have ended up at that kind of in that kind of place. But this story is very much in the same space. Pre-therapy, I'd have been calling these people stupid. Post-therapy, and perhaps post-puppy as well, post-becoming a dog owner, I completely get it. I completely get it. 12 grand for the radiotherapy. Injections and other treatments coming in at about £1,200 a month. Might need more chemotherapy. They don't know what the final cost is going to be. They've had Gus since he was 8 weeks old, and they've cancelled their wedding in order to spend the money they would have spent on getting married on their dog's health. They've already spent £3,500 on it. They're trying to get some refunds and some deposits returned on that, but everything else has been put on hold. And I get that. I could just about imagine doing that, actually, for our dog. And if you'd known me 10 years ago, you would find this absolutely impossible to believe. But that's when the Panorama investigation tonight into the fact that prices have gone up by 63% between 2016 and 2023 is so enraging and so galling. Because we must all, if we've had to pay a significant amount of money for veterinary services, we must all at some point in the last 10 years have suspected that we were being ripped off. This Panorama would seem to suggest that we have been. I think you could put the cat in Claridge's for less than it costs sometimes to get an overnight stay. One person said they'd paid £5,600 for 18 hours of vet care for their pet. And this is the point I'm making about funerals. I would have paid anything to save him, but I felt afterwards that we had been taken advantage of. You could have stayed at Claridge's for the best part of a week for that kind of money. And yet it was 18 hours in a vet's. Another described how the dog had had various tests and scans, and at the end of the treatment, 13 grand. And they didn't have any results. They didn't even tell them. They didn't discover anything in particular about the dog. I don't want a phone in that. Do I want a phone in that just involves people ringing in with ever larger numbers for ever more confusing and complicated treat? I don't know. Are we being ripped off? 0345 6060 973. Can I apologise for the fact that I would have mocked you once? If you have, like this couple, like Chris Bennett and Lindsay Moore and their dog Gus, I would have mocked you once if you cancelled your wedding to pay for your dog's health care. I'd have thought I would have mocked you. I don't know why. There was something wrong with me. An absence of empathy, perhaps? Or I don't know, some other sort of psychological flaw. I would have mocked you once. I'd have made jokes about the fact that if you fell asleep for long enough, your dog would start eating you on the sofa. I don't know what was wrong with me. I really don't. But I do know this. If you have made a similar sacrifice to these two in order to get your pet treated, I would really like to hear about it. Okay? 0345 6060 973. In many ways, I'm asking, how on earth do we afford this? You know what the national average income is. You know what the national average savings put to one side is. You're looking at the fairly run-of-the-mill costs for fairly run-of-the-mill treatments, and you find yourself thinking, as Richard puts it, 16 grand, James, and the dog died a year later. That must be quite commonplace. If you can provide some insights from within the industry, remember, no names, no pack drill because of libel laws, but how accurate would it be for me to suggest to you, we can change your name and all of that, for me to suggest to you that vets are now like timeshare salesmen in Tenerife in the 1980s. The constant pressure to upsell and to get you more. I can't even remember how much we were told they were going to charge for cleaning the dog's teeth. But it was a significant, it was hundreds of pounds for cleaning the dog's teeth. And again, because we love the dog, all right? And okay, Mrs. O'Brien arguably loves the dog. Well, she definitely loves the dog a little bit more than I do. You thought I was going to say she loves the dog more than she loves me then, didn't you? Don't be ridiculous. She loves the dog probably more than I do. And even then, it was like, we can do it ourselves. You can't, how hard can it be to brush a dog's teeth? Seriously. Don't phone me with advice yet, maybe later in the hour, because we did discover something else you can do instead, which was a fraction of the price when it comes to cleaning the dog's teeth. It was still a professional service. But I just found myself thinking about double glazing salesmen and timeshare salesmen from back in the day when you would just sort of think this is, you don't care. It's a terrible thing to say about a vet, but you seem to care more about how much money you can take offers than you do about anything else. You didn't go into the vetting for this. You went into it to help. And now you're reduced to trying to chisel as much cash out of our pockets and purses as you possibly can. Is that a fair? And independent vets will be different. These are the corporate ones. These are the ones that are owned by big companies. So there will be differences, but you'd have to shop around to find out, wouldn't you? Is this one of the greatest scandals of our time? 0345 6060 973. And in honour and admiration of Chris Bennett and Lindsay Moore, who've called off, they've called off their wedding to look after their cancer-stricken dog Gus, and I salute them. I really do. Have you done similar? Have you made similar sacrifice? How the hell does anybody find 20 grand? Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
This is LBC.
Hi, I'm Claire, and last year I did my first big hike for Cancer Research UK. It was amazing. The scenery was stunning, the volunteers cheered us through it, and the free hot meal at the end was really what I needed. I did the full marathon hike. There's also a half marathon and a 10K if you don't fancy the big one.
Join thousands of hikers like Claire and escape to nature as you help to fund life-saving research. Search Big Hike today for 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
During the Air France Rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Whoa. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589, from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
It might be mid-winter, but there's nothing mid about this offer. The new Samsung Galaxy S25 Ultra brings every winter sport moment to life, as crisp as freshly laid snow. With its stunning 6.9-inch dynamic AMOLED display, razor-sharp resolution. But here's the real win. Claim £250 cashback. Conveniently available to spend in your Samsung wallet. Purchase before January 29th from a participating retailer. Claim on the Samsung website within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 22 minutes after 12, and it's a funny, we'll do the psychology of it another day. I wrote a book about it, actually. My second book, How Not to Be Wrong, was all about all the things I'd been horribly wrong about in my life, and not just wrong, but very publicly and stridently wrong about in my life, in my professional life, on air, being rude about people who really loved their pets, or being obnoxious to people with tattoos, or being vile to people who were obese, and trying to dig in to the psychological reasons behind those positions, and finding quite a lot of material, actually, but not necessarily working out where the impulse, the original impulse, comes from. So I'm glad I'm not like that anymore. But if I would once have been rude about people giving lots of money to the vets, now I'm feeling rather rude towards the vets who are taking it. How reasonable is it? How big a scandal is this? And how close have you come to calling off your wedding in order to pay your vet's bills? James is in March in Cambridgeshire. James, what can you tell us?
Hi, James. Basically, I got a little Frenchie. He had an accident. He did a disc in his back. And we spent 3-4 weeks with the vets trying to sort him out, x-rays and so on, which cost us about £1,000. And then they suggested we took him to a specialised vet in Newmarket, and £8,300 later, he was fixed.
It's a lot of money.
No, it's a lot of money. The insurance company paid it.
Right.
That's fair enough. We now got a new insurance quote for him for this year, say. It was £2,700. And the cost that we have to add to it, if they have any claim, we got to pay 20% of any claim. So basically, he's not insured now. He's our little boy. We love him to pieces. But it's just obscene.
What happened? 30? How old are you? Do you mind me asking? My age?
I am 68.
68. Have you always had a dog? Did you have a dog as a boy?
No, this is the first dog ever had as a couple.
What was it like in the olden days? Like when you were a kid? Pardon me, not that olden, but did we just put pets down more? Is that what we did? Because you wouldn't have... I can't imagine my parents would have found that kind of money, even if things hadn't gone up exponentially.
The thing is, the dogs I had in the past, they've had, like, they've done their back leg or they've done their paws, yeah, and they've been treated, but it hasn't been anything like that. I mean, I had one with a broken leg, and it was put in plaster, and it was all sorted out. I think that cost me £150. It wasn't a lot of money. This is 30 years ago, but now, I mean, we get our prescription from the vet.
Yeah.
And we order the stuff online because it's double the price.
Can I ask a little bit rudely, how easy was it for you to find that £8,000? The insurer did it, sorry. So you've answered the question because you wouldn't be able to find it, which is why the dog is no longer insured or as insured as it would have been. 25 after 12, we weren't insured. It was our fault, by the way. But that perhaps is why I feel this story so keenly, because we had to find a serious chunk of change, although quite how serious I do not know and will never know, unless I accidentally stumble across it one day after overcoming a lifelong aversion to doing financial paperwork. It's stunning. And I mean, could you haggle? I don't know. Stuart's in Sevenoaks. Stuart, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James.
Hello, man.
Big fan.
You're welcome.
So, we have an epileptic dog.
Oh, yeah.
She's quite...
That sounds like the first line of a joke. And you know I'm not making light of your dog's condition, but my brain started searching for a punchline then. And that's entirely inappropriate. I apologise.
That's fine. She was kind of referred to a specialist who have done great work. You know, she's had MRIs and all that kind of stuff. And epilepsy is weird because epilepsy is basically a catch-all for basically we don't know why she has seizures. So the only way they can control it is with quite a detailed kind of drug regimen. She has to have five doses of drugs a day.
Good Lord.
The reason I was calling you was that we also, thank the Lord, we took out insurance before she had any symptoms. So when we were dealing with this vet, we said, oh, we've got this insurance. And they said, oh, fine, we'll deal directly with the insurance company. We don't need to present you with any bills. You don't need to do any admin, you know, left with us. Only we noticed that when we got the paperwork through, that they were charging us for 1 month's one of these doses, 1 month's worth, they were charging £830. And we thought, that's a lot of money.
It certainly is.
Yeah. So we kind of raised it, and the vet said to us, well, I can just issue you a prescription and you can source it yourself if you want.
Oh, that's nice.
So we said, So that was helpful. And they're a great vet, by the way.
Yeah.
So we said, okay, let's try that. So we got a prescription. We checked out how you do it. We went to our local pharmacist, handed over the prescription. They prepared the drugs.
What, a human pharmacist?
Human pharmacist, yeah. Your local high street pharmacist. there was a bit of a kerfuffle because they'd not issued anything. They'd not issued these drugs for a dog before, but they worked out how to do it.
Was it Boots?
I was told not to say.
Yeah, but that's Eleanor. I'm in charge. Was it? Well, I say I'm in charge until the next commercial, until the news bulletin. I think it's. I mean, they weren't breaking any rules, were they?
No, they weren't.
And you paid a private prescription. You paid for it.
Yes. Yeah,
that's fine. So it was Boots. I love that.
Yeah.
Boots. How many?
We paid £30 for the prescription.
Yeah.
And here's the kicker: where we were paying £830 for the drugs, Boots presented us with a bill of £42
for the same dose.
For the same dose.
So the vets had been putting a markup of... Don't laugh at me, all right? so it'd be £80 would be twice, and then times 10. Loads, Stuart.
Absolutely
loads.
An absolute lot. But the other thing I wanted to point out is that we then thought, well, we better do the right thing, and we phoned the insurance company and said, you know, is this right? Shouldn't, you know, should you sort of like... The insurance company were not in the slightest bit interested. There was no process to kind of reclaim any, you know, anything back or anything like that. So it's, you know, with no process, it's almost a
cartel there, so they didn't care.
That's kind of how it felt. Did not care.
I often find myself marvelling at things that pop up on the programme. And I remember marvelling at bits of this issue last time we spoke about it. I can't get my head around it for love or money. It makes no sense, does it? Because...
No.
How can anyone in good conscience put... I think that's about 1,000% what you've just said.
Right.
Doing my very, 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 very low-level mathematics skills.
Better than mine.
Yeah, I mean, it's 20 times more, so it'd be more than 1,000%. Anyway, someone will know. And no one cares, because fair play to the vet, then, for saving you the money. But why wouldn't the insurer care about that? Wouldn't the insurer... When my house got turned over, again, nearly 20 years ago, the insurer provided replacements for what had been next. So somehow they managed to find a laptop that was 5 years out of date to replace the laptop that had been nicked. Do you see what I mean? This is what insurers do. They go to great pains to say, I thought I was going to be laughing. I thought I was going to get a brand new laptop. State of the art, bells and whistles. But instead, all I got was a like for like exchange. It was new. It was still boxed, but it was the same era, the same model as the one that I'd lost, oddly. I don't know where they get that from, but a bit like Richer Sound selling last year's models at a smaller... Anyway, I digress. I thought insurers were dedicated to trying to save themselves as much cash as possible. What a strange old business. We haven't had a wedding yet. It was 2,000%. That's what I said, didn't I? Did I say 1,000%? Yeah, I said that's at least 1,000%. It was, in fact, 2,000%. Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
The media watchdog has opened an investigation into X over concerns around its AI chatbot being used to make sexualized images. Ofcom will look at whether users are being protected and if illegal content created by Grok is being taken down quickly enough. It's claimed 500 people have now been killed in protests in Iran in recent weeks. President Trump says Iranian leaders want to negotiate with the US after he threatened military action over a crackdown on demonstrators. And the former Conservative Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi has defected to Reform UK. He's the most senior former Conservative MP to join the party after serving in the role under Boris Johnson for 2 months. LBC weather, cloudy with some outbreaks of rain moving northeast, showers for southern and far northern Scotland, drier later on, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders!
Book clubbers.
Are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Fonterra Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
During the Air France rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589, from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
I've got a missing word round for you I forgot about, but that's quite nice to do it in the final hour of the programme. Drivers, I did have an unhinged headline as well, actually, but I think I might have lost it. Drivers hit out at Labour's socialist blank, or blanks, plural. Drivers hit out at Labour's socialist blanks. What do you think that is? What could possibly be socialist that would wind up drivers more than anybody else? Drivers hit out at Labour's socialist blanks. And staying with matters political, I'm delighted to be joined live by Nigel Farage to discuss the news today that Nadeem Zahawi, who was touting for Boris Johnson to have a second go at being Prime Minister at roughly the time that Boris Johnson withdrew from the race to have another go at being Prime Minister. Nigel joins us to discuss Mr. Zahawi's defection to Reform UK.
My message to you is clear, plain and simple. Never trust a Tory. Did you get that? I'll repeat it. Never trust a Tory. They will always let you down. They will always betray you.
Well, thank you, Nigel. Well, I've got you. Any comment yet on these increasingly disgusting allegations about the racist and anti-Semitic abuse that you directed at younger boys when you were at public school in South London?
Bernard Manning.
Pardon?
Bernard Manning.
Oh. 25-1 is the time. I don't know whether we'll be doing that again anytime soon, but it was very illuminating. Back to vets, costs. I'd like to find somebody who stands comparison with the couple who've cancelled their wedding to pay for their dog's cancer treatment. Well, I mean, it's going to take some beating, though. What could you do that would be bigger than that? You can't cancel a funeral, can you, to pay for your dog's cancer treatment? You could cancel a holiday, but a wedding is bigger than a holiday. They've got one couple saving up for a kitchen. I don't think that counts, does it? 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. How do we know when we're being whether we're being ripped off or not? Is the key question. Angela's in Woking. Angela, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello.
Our lovely dog had knee surgery last week, and 18 months prior to that, he had knee surgery on his other knee.
Oh, yes.
So first time round, because I took a break in my pet insurance, yeah, he wasn't covered.
That's what we did by accident. We didn't even realise we'd done it, but it turns out we hadn't, and we got absolutely spanked.
Yes, and I think the vets, obviously, you've got to pay up front, but the insurance companies are just not, I don't know if we're going to get paid out on this claim,
no.
So we're waiting to hear. But that's where I feel left down.
To be a pre-existing condition is what they'll say, is it? Maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Possibly. Hopefully not, but...
go on, how much?
Sorry?
How much?
£4,000 we pay that.
And, I mean, I hate to break it to you, but he's got two more legs.
I know. Please don't say that. Please don't say that.
No, so, right, yeah, sorry.
Even after, we've got to, invest in... physio on him, and that's got to come out of our pocket. That we may be able to claim back on that. But as you say, you're over a barrel because you would do anything for them, and it's
What did we used to do? You're too young to remember, and so am I. But did we just have them put down more? I don't mean that. I'm not being brutal or anything, because I completely get it.
I think so because my mum's Irish, like your descendants. And in Ireland, they would just have dog outside, or they'd try and treat it themselves. But, yeah, I think we did. Or they probably didn't live
it wouldn't even be an option. So the vet said there's nothing we can do. It's either the leg's either coming off or...
Yes,
just
exactly.
Have to hobble around for that. Oh, Lordy. And you just wouldn't... You'd find the money whether you had it or not, wouldn't you?
Well, we did. My mother-in-law helped us with this because it came at such a... expensive time of the year anyway with Christmas.
We'll never know. I mean, I don't know. How do we know what the guy... I don't want to spoil your new year, but guess how much it would cost to spend four nights at Claridge's next week?
About £2,000?
£2,970.
Oh,
so you'd still have change left over for a couple of shows, Angela. It's an extraordinary sum of money, and I just don't understand why. I mean, you've got equipment, and you've got wages, and you've got rent. That's it. Okay, the equipment's probably really expensive, but I just cannot for the life of me understand why it is. I mean, presumably because insurers normally pick up the bill, but then the shareholders of the insurance companies would be up in arms. Oh, it's a mystery. Angela, thank you. Paul's in Herne Bay. Paul, what can you tell us? Paul?
Hi, James. First time caller.
Well, I can tell you've not done this before. Hello. I was there for 10 minutes saying hello. Where were you? Oh, we've got a delay on the line. Not Paul's fault. Well, nobody's fault, really. Shall I do the missing word round? I'll do the missing word round now before we talk to Kim, who's in Harlow. It's a good one, this, if I haven't lost it, which I almost certainly will have done. What was it again? Drivers something something. Drivers hit out at Labour's socialist blank. Speed bumps. What do you think a socialist speed bump does? Work out how much a car is worth before deciding whether or not it's going to appear in the road in front. Kind of. It's Lewisham Council in South London. Stand accused of having speed bumps. And you know I'm not a petrol head. I don't really understand how this would work. That only scrape the bottoms of expensive cars. Well, I've got a very inexpensive car. I've got my father-in-law's old car. I can't even remember what make it is. A Vauxhall, I think. We got rid of the Volvo because it was diesel. We bought a diesel because they told us it was... Anyway. And that scrapes... scraping everything. It's a miracle it's still on the car, to be honest with you. So that's quite low at the front. But anyway, apparently if you've got an export... What about those massive 4x4s? Anyway, that's what a socialist speed bump is. If it's a bit higher... than another speed bump. That is a socialist speed bump. Sometimes you read these headlines and you think, who came up with that? I suppose if I cared enough, I'd read the whole article and hopefully I'd be able to work it out. But imagine accusing a speed bump of being socialist. Why is it even socialist? Because it discriminates against more expensive cars. Socialists don't discriminate against more expensive cars, you absolute balloons. Socialists believe everybody should drive the best available car. Everybody should have it. Under my glorious rule, everybody will have a Lamborghini. Socialism isn't about penalising people with nice cars. It's trying to make sure everybody gets a nice car. I don't know why I bother. Paul, let's go back to Paul in Herne Bay, and then we'll go to Kim in Harlow. Paul, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Have you ever driven over a socialist speed bump, Paul?
Not deliberately, no.
Carry on.
No. We've had over the years a number of experiences with high vet bills. And all of them I've always kind of been able to justify in some way in the back of my mind.
Yes.
But recently we had an experience that really took the biscuit. actually took the Christmas cake. Because our dog managed to digest a small amount of Christmas cake on the Friday after Christmas. And my wife immediately pointed out that this is raisins are absolutely fatal with certain dogs.
Yes, of course.
And that we ought to contact the vet. Well, I looked it up on the internet, and every site on the internet was doom and gloom. Oh, yes, your dog is going to last 20 minutes if you don't get to the vet.
Yeah.
So I looked. It was 8 o'clock in the evening, so I looked up the local...
Was it on Christmas Day?
Vet. No. Oh, this was on the Friday. It was not a bank holiday.
No.
So it was 8 o'clock in the evening. So I drove the vet, which is a 10-minute journey away. I left at 8 p.m., got to the vet's at 10 past 8. The vet... took some notes on the dog, which took less than 5 minutes.
Was the vet open, or did they meet you there?
No. The vet was open. It's an overnight vet,
yeah.
Specifically for night calls.
Oh yeah, okay.
Anyway, there were 5 minutes with the vet. She said, "What I'm going to do is I'm going to give the dog an injection. The dog will vomit, and the raisins will come up." So I said, "Okay." So she went, sat us in a room, went away. Got the necessary drug, injected it into the neck of the dog, then left the room. I sat in the room with the dog by myself, guiding the dog's vomit into a plastic bowl.
Yeah.
The vet then came back 20 minutes later and said, "Oh, that's okay. That looks like the raisin. You can go now. Here's your bill, £535. I was home within the hour. Now, the drugs I looked up that she was given came to £36. So basically, we were charged £499 for less than 10 minutes of a vet's actual time. And if you do that on an hourly basis, that's probably as much as Elton John earns for a concert. I don't know. It was so absurd that this was the only time I just can't justify it under any kind of set of rules. I just can't work out how you could charge that money.
But we do, don't we? We kind of, I mean, so it is, I mean, what's going to happen? Are they suddenly going to be properly regulated and the prices would start plummeting? Or is it going to stay like this indefinitely? If the pressure comes from anywhere, you'd imagine it would come from the insurance companies, because most people aren't going to be on the hook for it themselves like you were. But that... did you ask the vet about it? Did you? Because you don't. Because that's the thing I'm worried about now, is taking the pet to the vet and the vet having the hump with me.
Well, they just. I mean, whenever you in my experience, whenever you query bills, they just say, "Well, that's the policy."
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have to come here. And my worry is always, what happens to the people that don't have £500?
Well, what happens to the people who don't have £20,000?
Well, exactly. What happens to their dog? Does it just get put to sleep? I mean, you know, what I don't know.
I think that must be what we used to do, mustn't it?
Yes.
It must be that we just put animals to sleep a lot more.
Well, yes. And frankly, I have to say, if I hadn't been able to look it up on the internet and had the bejesus frightened out of me, I probably would have not known that raisins were that deadly, and the dog may or may not have survived anyway.
I was thinking about that the other day. What did I do the other day? I'll tell you what I did, Paul. I fixed the washing machine door.
Right, and
it was quite a tricky job, actually, and I'd got it all off YouTube. So in the days, I mean, how different, I mean, it's not necessarily radio phone-in territory, unless I get promoted to North Norfolk Digital, but the things that you can't quite believe you can now do yourself. So you never would have known that raisins were bad for a dog, would you, unless someone had told you? But you looked it up. And I fixed the washing machine door.
The most frightening thing of all, when coming back to people that can't afford to pay, a lot of the websites were saying, don't try and get your dog to vomit yourself. Because apparently people have tried to pour all sorts of noxious chemicals down their dog's throat try and make them vomit.
Oh, you can't be doing that.
Because they can't afford the vet. So that's the first thing they do. Apparently they mix hydrogen peroxide with water.
Do you brush your dog's teeth?
I do as often as she will let me, which is pretty much every other day.
Really? God, you're a wonderful pet owner. Because they try to charge us hundreds of pounds for that. 12:46 is the time. I'm being sent a variety of tweets that Nadeem Zahawi apparently posted about Nigel Farage, but I'm struggling to establish whether or not they're completely real. Also, Andy, I may well have been intending to read out your unhinged headline off Blue Sky yesterday, but I've lost it and I can't remember it, so send it again. And if it is a contender, because I definitely had one in the back of my mind for an unhinged headline, but there's nothing there now. There's nothing in the back of my mind, or for that matter, the front of my mind, and there's precious little in the middle.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Asma Mir.
America says it's locked, loaded and ready to intervene in Iran as protesters are shot on the streets. Do you support the US getting involved?
Asma Mir at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Derek, Tara from Flash Designs here. Hope you're well. Not sure if you've seen my emails from last month, but could you please pay my invoice? Thank you so much. Bye. Hi, it's Tara, Flash Designs. Did you get my last voicemail? I know you're busy, but please pay my invoice today, if possible. Hello, again. It's Tara, again. Politely nudging, again.
Still chasing unpaid invoices? Let Sage Copilot help do the chasing so you can get paid up to 7 days faster. Search Sage Accountant today.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Find me somebody to love.
The Dreams Mega Clearance event is now on. I bet you beds are excited.
Oh yeah, we're bouncing.
Don't miss up to 40% off a range of stylish beds and comfy mattresses.
But don't hang about. You snooze, you lose.
Dreams. Love your bed. Go on. Leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern. Selling your car can be super simple if you choose We Buy Any Car instead of selling privately. We Buy Any Car can get it sorted in under an hour, so no weekends watching randoms inspect your car to not even buy it. If only they could make finding where you park simpler.
Was it floor two or three? I swear I parked here. Where is it?
We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:49. Here's a magnificent... I've got a little bit of popular culture for you now. You must go and see Hamlet, by the way, this new film with Paul Mescal and Jesse Buckley in it, based on Maggie O'Farrell's novel. It's just utterly, utterly beautiful. About the death of William Shakespeare and Anne Hathaway's little boy, who was called Hamlet, which was interchangeable for Hamlet back in the day. I mean, there's some leaps in there, plot-wise, in terms of what's historically available and what isn't, but who cares? They also say OK a lot. I'm surprised no reviewers have picked up on that. Did we say OK? I thought OK was a kind of Second World War type thing, or at least an Americanism. It seems unlikely to me that Shakespeare said OK a lot, because I'm fairly confident it doesn't appear in any of his plays. OK, Hamlet? OK, King Lear, let's go. OK, I'm sure that maybe I dreamt it, but I think they say OK quite a lot. Anyway, I digress. It's a film of unutterable beauty. It really is a stone-cold classic, so do go and see that. And I've just been reminded of that because I don't know if you follow these sorts of accounts, but I'm fascinated by old TV. Did you know that they made a pilot of Alexander the Great? They were going to turn Alexander the Great into a recurring series, into a TV series in 1963. William Shatner as Alexander. It gets better. Adam West, who played Batman in the really camp version of Batman, as Cleander. John Cassavetes was in it, Joseph Cotten, Simon Oakland, and it's just gone up on YouTube. So if you like that sort of thing, lucky you. 12:51 is the time. We, meanwhile, are talking... You know, I've had more calls on this than the stuff about invading Iran, possible World War III. What did we do in the last... the really fascinating story, the one I'm going to come back to again and again and again, is that how can the real numbers for immigration be the polar opposite of what the people who care most about immigration profess to care about? But I got more calls on the vets. It's crazy. Anyway, quantity and quality are not the same thing, although I'm sure Nazreen will be pure quality. Nazreen, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, hello, James. First-time caller, huge fan.
Thank you.
As a veterinary surgeon, I just want to say that the vast majority of my colleagues are not doing what we do in order to make money. If that was the case, we wouldn't be vets. There are other professions that make far more money.
I completely believe you. In fact, the panorama tonight actually contains vets essentially complaining about the pressure they're under from their employers, as opposed to accusing you all of being chiselers and grifters.
Yeah, but there is pressure from the corporates. There's no doubt about that. But we all have... as individuals, we have the choice to do what we do and to be able to justify the costs that are involved. I think having a pet is a luxury, and I think people are not aware of the costs involved in medical treatment, mainly because in this country we have the NHS, so private healthcare is not something people are familiar with, so they're not aware of the costs.
Yeah, maybe.
A lot of the people that have phoned in with specific examples, and I'm happy to address most of them. I mean, if you look at the cost of drugs, for example, the veterinary practice stocks the drugs, gives you advice on use of the drugs, helps you with any side effects your pet might experience with the drugs. We can't compete with a warehouse stocking drugs and dispensing drugs, or a big pharmaceutical a pharmacy like Boots, for example.
No, but the research shows that the prices have gone up 63% between 2016 and 2023. Not many things have gone up by that much. So there's obviously, there's several moving parts to this story, but I completely accept, and I'm more than happy to reiterate, that the massive majority of people who go, well, everyone who becomes a vet does so for rather splendid reasons, not for riches, not for fame and fortune. But the industry seems to be in a bit of a pickle, Nazreen, in some ways.
Oh, absolutely.
The profession
does need to be looked at very carefully and closely. I've been a vet for over 30 years, and I've seen many changes in the profession, and not all of them for the better. But ultimately, nowadays, the things that can be done, the treatments that can be offered, the procedures that can be offered for pets, it's completely different to what
this
it
is.
Was
a, this is a really good.
Ago.
This is why my question wasn't quite as stupid as it sounded about what we used to do back in the day. Is that there wouldn't be any options if you turned up at the vet with a pet in various conditions. There wouldn't have been any options. It was either suffer in pain or a humane. Put to sleep, whereas now there's so many different things you can do, all of which are quite expensive.
Well, yes, because there's a huge investment in training people, in the cost of equipment, in the time taken. I mean, you mentioned a dental procedure, for example.
Yeah.
It's not just a matter of cleaning a dog's teeth. It's assessing them for anesthetic, making sure that they're monitored. It's not somebody cleaning their teeth, somebody monitoring the general anesthetic and making sure that your pet is okay under general anesthetic.
Yeah, but no one did this 20 years ago, 30 years ago. No one paid a fortune to have their dog's teeth cleaned 30 years ago, and that's not a sort of modern medical. And also, you'd have a crack at it yourself, unless you've got a very big dog and you're worried about losing a finger.
And there were a huge number of pets that were living in pain and discomfort on a daily basis.
Right. I just remember my friend's Labrador. It had breath like the bottom of a bird cage, and that probably.
Well, exactly. Yeah. They didn't have a choice. You have many more choices.
You're a wonderful advocate for your profession. You really are. I mean that most sincerely. And you're right to remind us that the massive majority of vets are probably just as dismayed by some of the things that we've been talking about. As the rest of us are, and also, of course, that some of these costs are inevitable and perfectly sensible, but some of them are not. Some of them are neither.
Well, yes, I think that is true. But I think at the end of the day that every client has a choice. Nobody that comes into the veterinary practice is forced to do anything. It is ultimately the choice of the client.
No, you are. You're technically correct. But I think that most people would probably feel that they had no choice but to find the money because they love their pet so much. But that's moot. That's a slightly different conversation. While I have you, Nazreen, have you ever driven over a socialist speed bump?
I'm not sure what a socialist speed bump is.
Somebody hasn't been paying attention. Absolutely outrageous. Thank you, Nazreen. Kim's in Harlow. Last word on this. We haven't found anyone who cancelled a wedding, Kim. What a failure I am as a radio presenter.
Sorry. James, I spoke to you last time you covered this subject.
It was quite a while ago. Don't make me sound boring.
Yeah, it was. No, just a bit of a different perspective. About 3.5 years ago, my dog had surgery for removing cancerous tumours, skin tumours,
yes.
Skin cancers. The bill then for the procedure and all the biopsies and what have you was £2,300. Tomorrow, my lad is going in for more surgery because he has another cancerous tumour.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it's a good prognosis. So
good.
We hope things are going to be okay going forward. But my bill this time is just under £1,200.
Oh, what's happened? Do you think?
What's happened? So they have reduced their consult fee, whereas I was paying. Actually, on top of that, I've got about £245 bill for the. Consultation where they took the tissue biopsy. Now that's
I'm going to run out of time. So we think it's my fault, not yours. I've got to start looking at the clock, Kim. They've dialed it down, presumably because of conversations like this in the media.
I, I think it was the government investigation into it, but there has been
I think it was you and me. I think it was your call. I think it was your call to this rate. That's the kind of power that we wield, Kim. Speaking of power, last word today goes to Nadeem Zahawi, who was Chancellor of the Exchequer for 10 minutes a few years ago and then bet everything on Boris Johnson at roughly the same time that Boris Johnson resigned from politics forever. Here is Nadeem Zahawi tweeting in 2015. I'm not British-born, Mr. Nigel Farage. I am as British as you are. Your comments are offensive and racist. I would be frightened to live in a country run by you, said Nadeem Zahawi about the man whose party he's just joined and called for to be Prime Minister. Self-interest? Huh. Surely not. It's nearly 1 o'clock. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back for free on the Global Player or the LBC app. Podcasts, top stories, news categories, opinions, you name it, you can get it. It's all there, including my podcasts, which are rather good. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Sawbrick. But now, I've nearly said manfully, which would have been a completely inappropriate word. Gamely? That sounds a bit weird as well. Happily, merrily, cheerfully sitting in for Sheila Fogarty, it's Asma Mir.
James, thank you very much. Coming up on the programme, we're going to be asking you how safe do you feel in London and what does the aforementioned Nadeem Zahawi's defection from the Conservatives to Reform UK mean for the Conservatives, mean for politics in this country, if anything? But we are going to start with Iran. Of course, America saying that it's locked, loaded and ready to intervene in Iran as protesters are shot on the streets. Do you support the US getting involved? The US starts, let's say, military strikes on targets in Iran. Does that make the world more dangerous or safer?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Ofcom has opened an investigation into X over concerns about its Grok AI chatbot. The media watchdog is looking into whether users are being protected from it being used to make illegal sexualised images. Technology Secretary Peter Carl is due to address MPs about the issue in the Commons this afternoon. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch is proposing under-16s be banned from social media completely.
Very interesting conversation with the Australian Prime Minister, and he talked about why he was doing it, and I realised that this was something which, you know, we should be getting ahead of. I'm a mother of three children. I have a technology background. That's what I used to do before I became a politician. And I find it very hard. I know how to put on parental controls. More needs to be done. Social media is a space for adults. It's not a space for children.
X's owner Elon Musk has previously said controls have been tightened following concerns about Grok. Human rights activists in Iran say 500 people are believed to have died in protests in recent weeks. President Trump claims Iranian leaders have been in touch to negotiate after he threatened military action following a crackdown on demonstrators. Vice President of the European Commission, Kaya Kallas, has told LBC she doesn't think it's a particularly wise move.
Right now, it is important that any change can come from within the society. We have seen that these regimes are extremely resilient to any outside intervention. And sometimes, you know, outside intervention will actually make the people rally around the flag, which is actually making it harder for the people to deliver change.
You can hear the full interview with Ms. Callis on Tonight with Andrew Marr from 6 p.m. The former Conservative Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi has become the most senior former frontbencher to defect to Reform UK. He held the role for 2 months under Boris Johnson and served as a government minister until 2023. Thousands of people in Kent and parts of Sussex are without water. It's prompted Kent County Council to declare a major incident. South East Water says a number of issues are to blame, including burst pipes due to freezing conditions. And the price of gold has soared to a new record high as concerns about fresh threats to the independence of the US Central Bank fuel demand for the asset. The metal climbed by around 2% on Monday morning to a high of $4,600 US dollars. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 7 points at 10,132. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with some outbreaks of rain moving northeast, showers for southern and far northern Scotland, drier later, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Subway knows you love a good deal. So say hello to Sub Yay. Weekly deals that will make you go, yay. That money off your fave subs and spuds, getting bonus points on your order, or free upgrades to a meal deal. That's Sub Yay. Get all the best offers exclusively for Subway Rewards members. See the Subway app for specific offer availability and T's and C's.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Asma Mir.
Good afternoon to you. This is Asma Mir on LBC. It is 4 minutes past one. I'm sitting in for Sheila Fogarty. She will be back on Wednesday. We are going to start, of course, with what is going on in Iran. You will no doubt have seen the footage, some of it incredibly disturbing, of what is going on. Protesters on the streets. It's quite difficult, of course, to get footage. It's difficult to get phone footage out of Iran because there is an internet blackout, which is which people are sporadically, I think, able to get through. But you will have seen the protesters, and you will have seen body bags lying on the floor. The regime responding in force, really, to these protests that have been going on for almost 2 weeks now, I think it is, and at least 538 people have been killed in the violence. This is according to the US-based human rights activist news agency. That includes 490 protesters, and apparently over 10,000 people have been arrested by the Iranian authorities. This is huge, and you may be thinking, how does this affect me? Why should I be concerned about this? Of course, the minute something like this happens and America talks about getting involved, that then leads to the question of what follows from that, really. What's the domino effect? Because nothing, really, we've probably learned by now, haven't we? Nothing in the world of geopolitics happens in a vacuum. There are always ripple effects. So if, for example, in America, not necessarily talking about military strikes at this point, but if that were to happen, what does that mean for the rest of the world? Does that make us safer, or does it make the world a more dangerous place? Now, speaking on Air Force One yesterday, Donald Trump said that he is prepared to get militarily involved following hundreds of people in Iran being killed.
There seem to be some people killed that aren't supposed to be killed. These are violent, if you call them leaders, I don't know if they're leaders or just they rule through violence. But we're looking at it very seriously. The military is looking at it. And we're looking at some very strong options. Iran called to negotiate.
Yesterday.
The leaders of Iran called. They want to negotiate. I think they're tired of being beat up by the United States. Iran wants to negotiate, yes.
Negotiate what?
We may meet with them. I mean, a meeting is being set up. But we may have to act because of what's happening before the meeting.
Now, speaking on Nick Ferrari at breakfast, the Business and Trade Secretary, Peter Carr, was asked why we are not hearing the Prime Minister or the Foreign Secretary on what is happening in Iran.
Well, it's a very fast-moving situation,
well,
and there's lots of fast-moving...
PM, didn't it? No?
And there's lots of fast-moving situations going on right around the world at the moment. And as you can see, that we're not sitting on the sidelines when it comes to intervening on sanctioned tankers. Britain is doing its role, playing its role. We are actually playing an assertive and active partner. Thank God that we have a Prime Minister that has now returned Britain to the international stage, is respected on the international stage, and he, as a statesman, is now respected by his colleagues around the world. So we need the Prime Minister to be engaging with world leaders, thinking the way through this and thinking how we can be there for the people of Iran to make sure they get the country that they are clearly fighting for.
Well, last question then. Would that mean that you would support the banning or the proscription of the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, as other countries such as the United States and Sweden have done? Would you support that, Mr. Kyle?
So we already have sanctioned that organisation. Now that is in line with what other countries have done. When it comes to using the prescription, ability that we have, they are for the domestic terror organisations. And we're talking here about a foreign state organisation. So Jonathan Hall, who is the independent reviewer of terror legislation, and looked into this last summer, and he has said that the domestic legislation isn't fit to be used in these purposes, and he might well be making recommendations of how we change the law, but these are things that we will look at going forward. But be in no doubt, we have used the full extent of the legislation that we do have to sanction the people working in that state organisation and the state organisation itself, and we have a very tight sanctions regime against Iran itself. Right. We want Iran to allow peaceful protest, to protect people who are protesting, and to listen to those people who are on the streets at the moment, not attack them and not murder them, as we're seeing at the moment.
Right, so the government say they're not prescribing currently the IRGC because it's complicated. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark asked the Conservative Party leader Kemi Badenoch this morning whether this decision is putting British people at risk by not doing so.
I think that there must be something that the government knows that it is not telling us. I'm certainly not against prescription, but I do know that there are already strong pieces of legislation like the National Security Act that means that we can stop the activity of the IRGC on our streets. The IRGC is the army of Iran. It's an enemy army. You don't need to prescribe an enemy army. We've never had to do that before. There are laws in place now. What worries me is if we're not using those laws. So let's focus on what we can do there. But the bottom line is that prescribing the IRGC doesn't help those people in Iran right now. What I would like to see is us helping those people get the freedom which they deserve.
Right. Let's speak now to Daniela Siperi, who is an Iranian journalist, a human rights activist who has a lot of family still in Iran. Good afternoon to you, Daniela.
Hi.
There has been a pattern of protest in recent years. We see the footage. We see people going up against the IRGC, up against the regime, suffering hugely for it, and then it is snuffed out in a very brutal way. Do you think this is different this time or not?
First of all, I would like to say that protests in Iran are not happening once every few years, and then there's another protest. They all belong together. They're all part of a revolutionary process going on for years. People are fighting for decades for the end of this regime and for freedom. What is different this time is, again, similar to 2022, all the provinces in Iran are protesting and going on strikes. But what is different this time is that the bazaaris, so the shop owners on the bazaars and markets, they started the protests. Mm. We see them more of a conservative group in Iran. So that's actually very interesting that they were the ones starting those protests because of the catastrophic economic system. But then very, very soon, all the protests were most against the regime itself, like against the Islamic Republic itself. And we are seeing that it's more than 90 hours that there is an internet shutdown. We are not in contact with the people. But what sometimes through Starlink, some videos and some reports are getting to international media and to international human rights organizations. And what we see from them is a brutal massacre happening in Iran. Human rights groups assume that there must be thousands of deaths by now. It's horrible pictures we're getting, dead bodies piling up on each other. It's really brutal scenes that we are seeing. And this brutality is something that I have never seen before.
And I want to ask about, I want to ask about Donald Trump, et cetera, and how this could possibly pan out in a second. But I did say that you've got a lot of family still in Iran. Are they able to stay safe by staying at home, or are they out protesting?
If I knew if they were out protesting, I would not say it in public because the regime is also monitoring activists outside of Iran and threatening their families inside Iran. So I never talk about the political activities of my family. But even if they were, I wouldn't know, because for more than 5 days we have had no contact to the people in Iran. And that this is something that's extremely scary for me, because I don't know if my family is well or not. We even know that even people are being killed just for passing by a protest. So even if people are not protesting, there's still a danger going out.
Donald Trump is talking about very strong military action, he has said. And he's also said that Iran want to negotiate. They've spoken to me, etc., saying that they want to talk about what might happen. What is the best outcome here? Do you trust the Iranian regime to listen to the rest of the world and say, okay, we're going to step away from this, we're going to stop doing what we're doing, we're going to return some kind of economic stability to the country, etc.? Or do you think that actually there does need to be some kind of regime change?
Even if they were willing to stop the violence, to abolish the death sentence, to bring economic stability, even if they were, that's not what the people in Iran want. They are very clear with their slogans. They say death to the dictator, death to the Islamic Republic. Mm. They do not want this regime anymore. So what they want are not reforms. They want a regime change. They want stability, democracy, freedom. And yeah, the problem with Donald Trump is that on the one hand, he says that he wants to negotiate with the regime, but on the other hand, he wants to strike. So we are dealing with a U.S. president who is not sure what he wants to do himself. So we can never be sure of what he does next. And this is making everything even more scary.
But is the might of America and the might of Donald Trump not useful in some ways to the protesters? I mean, apparently, again, I don't know if this is true, but apparently there's some footage of people chanting Donald Trump's name and also chanting the son of the former Shah, Reza Pahlavi's name.
It is important for states like the US, but also Germany or the European Union itself, or like world leaders, to have a clear message to the regime and to demand this brutality to stop and to put pressure on the regime. For example, the European Union could put the IRGC on the terror list. That would be a huge backlash for the regime. But what we are saying is the exchange of words. And what we hear from Iran is that the people want the U.S. to interfere in some way. Military intervention, because they are so desperate that they think only military intervention can stop this regime. Some, and this is more people that I speak to, they don't want a military interference. They want peace, and they don't want another war, because they have seen war in June and they have seen that they were not protected from the bombs. And war always caused civilians to die. But what they do want is that the world steps up and helps the people in Iran. But yeah, some people are so desperate with this regime that they say whatever comes next is better than this, even if it is war.
What about Reza Pahlavi? Would you support him returning?
It's not for me to decide. For me personally, I always say that the last time when an exiled opposition figure came back to Iran as a single leader, it was not a great experience. So why do it again? Mm. But he has followers inside Iran. There are people shouting his name and want the monarchy back or want him back. Some don't even care who comes next. They just want the mullahs to go. Some are even against. So as much as we hear paroles for Reza Pahlavi, we also hear paroles that say down with oppressors, whether it is Shah or mullah. So okay. The society in Iran is very diverse, and there are people who want the monarchy, there are people who don't, and this is up to the people in Iran to decide after the regime is gone.
Okay, Daniela, thank you very much for that. It's Daniela Sipheri. She's an Iranian journalist, a human rights activist who has quite a bit of family who are still in Iran. So you've heard it there is complicated. We've always known that this was complicated, and there is never a one-size-fits-all solution because not everybody wants the same thing. But as far as Donald Trump As far as America are concerned, with all their military might, it's unclear what Donald Trump is intending on doing. He was asked on Sunday by reporters on Air Force One if Iran had crossed his previously stated red line of protesters being killed. And he said, they're starting to. It looks like it. Well, I mean, clearly they have gone over that red line. We're looking at it very seriously. He said the military is looking at it. We're looking at some strong options. We will make a determination. So the question is, do you trust Donald Trump to intervene in Iran in whichever way that is, not necessarily military strikes? And would that make the world safer or more dangerous? Do you trust Donald Trump to intervene in Iran? 0345 60 60 973. It's 119.
This is LBC.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled out my name in tea lights and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings next to the lamppost where I got killed by a nice lady. Just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
During the Air France Rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589. From London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
When it comes to retirement advice, the last thing you want is to be put in a bucket. Seen as this type of person or that type of person. At Fisher Investments UK, we never put you in a bucket. We always tailor retirement advice that's just right for you. Fisher Investments UK. Retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
This is LBC. Message Asma Mir on WhatsApp now. 0345 60 60973.
Yes, 0345 60 60973. I'm going to go to Toby in Bristol in just a second. But in terms of what Donald Trump is thinking about, a range of options, not just military strikes, secret cyber weapons, widening sanctions and providing online help to anti-government sources. And we keep talking about Reza Pahlavi. He is the US-based son of Iran's ousted Shah. He has been, I think, writing online, posting online, saying, I am with you, keep going to the protesters, and actually urging the security forces and government employees to cross the line to join the protesters. So that, in case you hear the word Reza Pahlavi, that is who that is. And not everyone asking for him to come back, but some people are. So the question is, do you trust Donald Trump to intervene in Iran? Toby in Bristol, do you?
Not in the slightest, but Trump has no issue about making decisions that purely are of his own devising, as we've seen in Venezuela. I think one of the things I was going to mention was about the history of Iran. I'm not Iranian. My family is not at all. But it's worth bearing in mind that in the early 1950s, when there was a democratically elected prime minister in Iran, the British and Americans basically colluded to remove him and install the Shah of Iran, who then over the years became an incredible despot. And his son is effectively saying he is legitimate in that sense, which he isn't. So there is no really good outcome to this whole situation, because it's ultimately, again, about resources, and that's what drives Trump. It's his desire to secure what he sees as his portion of the world, and that he has every right to intervene whenever he feels like it, because he has the military might behind him.
I'll come back to the resources point in a second, but it's also, isn't it, as is so often the case, about just vested interests as well, because if you go through the options of what the outcomes could be, for example, a replacement leader, that is, you know, that's incredibly complicated too. And you can, and ultimately that splits everyone, because there are so many different options and none of them are particularly different. I don't know if the Iranian people are necessarily, whether they necessarily all want the same thing or the same person in position.
There seems to be a lot of indication that they're pretty evenly split between all the options that are available, yeah. including keeping the people who are in power at the moment. And that usually happens when you have countries that have been destabilized over multi-generational periods of time. Mm-hmm. And it's the same in other parts of the world where, shall we say, outside influence has caused such disruption that it leaves the people who are struggling under these systems incapable of actually seeing a way out of it. And we've seen it now in what's happened in Libya, what's happened in Iraq, where we decided that the person in charge wasn't acceptable for various reasons. And obviously, people like Maduro and the Iranian leadership aren't human in their attitude towards life. But the options to the people who are there, it just means changing the people at the top, and there's still the people being shot by the people in charge. And that doesn't seem to really change. It's another nasty old man who is seemingly trying to secure their legacy over a country which they have no legitimate claim to. And it doesn't matter what, in inverted colour, their flag is. It seems to be the people who always suffer, and that's what regime change, that's what when you're fought over for your resources and not for the people, mm-hmm. happens to countries, and we just see this over and over again.
So should it not have happened in the past then? Pressing for regime change, and should we just leave Iran to whatever might happen?
It's really difficult because you have that sort of liberal democracy sort of dilemma of, if we leave them to it, they're all going to slaughter each other. But if we go in, effectively, we're almost making things worse. I mean, that's certainly what we saw when the legitimate government that was democratically elected in Iran in the early 1950s, that's what happened. Eisenhower literally went and said, we're not having Iran nationalizing their oil reserves. And they physically removed him into house arrest, and he died and was buried inside his house because he couldn't be removed because of the political turmoil that would then result. Mm. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Okay. And like many of these situations, like we're seeing all over the world at the moment, there is no easy outcome. But then that is what life is about. There is no easy outcome, and what people are looking for are easy solutions, which is why when they say we can precision bomb our way out of this, well, we know that doesn't work. We've seen what that does to countries like Libya.
Okay. Toby, thank you very much. You make a really, really good point. Let's speak to Haspi, who's in Hampstead, who is Iranian. Haspi, do you trust Donald Trump to get this right or not?
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Look, I don't think Trump jumping in military helps the people of Iran at all. As you know, history has shown that foreign intervention often threatens hardline regimes, and they put ordinary civilians in more danger, in my opinion. If Trump genuinely cares about human rights, the focus should be on diplomatic pressure and protecting access to information like the internet, which has been cut for the past 4 days. Mm. Me and so many other Iranians have not been able to be in touch with our families in Iran, and we are worried. I believe the threat that Trump makes, it could spark a wider sort of a war. And what worries me is that every time a U.S. president talks about intervention, it shifts the focus away from the Iranian people and hands the regime a narrative of the foreign interference. The protesters right now in the street, they don't need bombs, more bombs over their head. They need protection, visibility, and international pressure that doesn't turn their country into another battlefield.
Haspi, I want you to keep listening, just because I want to speak to someone else who's also Iranian. This is Mehdi, who's in Manchester, who is Iranian and thinks Trump should intervene. Is that right?
No, Trump should. Hi, good afternoon. Yeah, Trump, from my point of view, Trump should intervene. Mm-hmm. If we check the history and everybody calls that, okay, maybe this happened in Iraq, this happened in Syria. Okay, Iraq was a mistake. Nobody have an issue with that one. But if you see, for example, in Panama, in Japan, or in Germany, okay, some foreign country, if they help the people, it would have a good effect. For example, in Syria, okay, if Biden or Obama, they just stand by and said, okay, Assad, don't do this, don't cross this red line. They did cross this, they cross red line, they just watched them, and this happened to Syria. But in Iran, we have so many people, they said, oh, if Trump comes, your country becomes like Syria. But no, this is the problem of not Trump. This is the problem for previous administration. They do not help the Syrian people. Otherwise, in UK, you don't have so much Syrian refugee.
Okay.
Because of the mistake of the
U.S. Mehdi, what about the point that, I think it was Toby, who was a caller a couple of callers ago, he said that you go in, you have regime change, you change the guy at the top, but the people still suffer, and then America and the world, you know, turn their backs and go off and concentrate on something else. Do you not worry about that?
Yes, no. The problem is, over this 50 years, less than 50 years, we didn't have any alternative, okay? Now we have alternative. We have someone who everybody agree on him. You know, the Mr. Pahlavi, maybe I'm not supporting Pahlavi, okay?
But hang on. Mehdi, you're saying that everybody agrees on Reza Pahlavi?
Most of the people in the studio are chanting for him, okay? They're calling him.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, but that's not all of it. That's not all of Iran, though, is it? Not the people who are protesting.
If you see the videos, they're coming outside from Iran, mm-hmm. okay?
Yeah.
And you will realize most of the people these days, they just see him as a bridge to cross from the Iranian regime. Okay. And also he said, I will not become your leader at the future. Let's pass from this regime. We will go to the vote. We will have a vote. That's it.
A democratic vote.
At the moment, we have just one enemy. That's it.
I couldn't quite get what you said there. You said you have one enemy, and then what did you say?
Yes. You know, we have just one enemy at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And okay? Who is that?
This is Iranian regime.
Okay.
Iranian regime is our common enemy. So everybody agreed, let's together, let's kick out this enemy from Iran. So later on, with help of Mr. Pahlavi and all the government, foreign government, US, Europe, we will have start to have a vote. We can have a good election.
Okay, Mehdi, you're very optimistic, and it's good to hear some optimism. I'm not convinced that everyone agrees, because no one ever does, do they, on one thing. But thank you for your contributions. We heard from Mehdi, who thinks Trump should intervene, and from Haspi, who thinks that Trump should not. What do you think? 03456060973. Do you trust Donald Trump to intervene in Iran? Would that make the world safer or more dangerous? And also, coming up, the former Chancellor, Nadeem Zahavi, has defected to Reform UK. I'm going to speak to LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, who was at the press conference earlier today. It is 1:31 now. Let's get the news on LBC with Amelia Cox.
Downing Street has suggested the government could stop using X if it's not satisfied with its response to concerns about its AI chatbot. Ofcom has opened an investigation into the social media platform after people started using Grok to create sexualized images. Number 10 has also played down the prospect of a ban on the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps following a crackdown on protesters in Iran. Human rights activists claim 500 people have been killed in recent anti-regime demonstrations. And former Conservative Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi has announced he's defected to Reform UK. He says he believes that Nigel Farage has put together a team to deliver for Britain. LBC weather, cloudy with some outbreaks of rain moving northeast. Showers for southern and far northern Scotland, drier later on, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like. From real Octopus Energy calls.
You just get it right, the customer service, the sort of communication. You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company. So well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Hey, business owners. Need help taking payments online? Well, there's a whole world of transactions powered by Elavon.
Whether it's through payment accepting, customer connecting, real-time reporting, round-the-clock supporting, fraud detecting or business protecting. Elavon supports all payments for your business. To get started, visit elavon.co.uk. Elavon, your world of payments.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
And yes, we will build the wall.
The ladies, not for turning.
It's going to be a U-turn.
It's been a U-turn from Labour.
Zarika about the U-turn.
Times change, but for over 240 years, the Times and Sunday Times have been on the ground, delivering in-depth, trusted reporting, so you can understand what's really going on. Times change. The Times remains.
On Booking.com, it's easy to book your holiday home. And thanks to no hidden fees, there's no more...
Guys, found a villa, I'm confirming. Wait. Added fees?
We don't do sneaky added fees. So you can go from home to holiday home with no dramas.
And relax.
On Booking.com, finding a holiday home's easy. Booking.com. Booking.com. Yeah.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC with Asma Mir. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
There's a lot of you who want to get in touch and talk about whether you trust Donald Trump to intervene in Iran. Some of you are Iranian, some of you are not. 0345 6060 973. Before that, though, we are going to talk about Reform UK with LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, because they had a big unveiling, a big reveal today, and it was the it's funny saying former chancellor, because how long was Nadine Zahawi chancellor?
Not very long at all.
Was it 2 days?
A few days. Yes, it feels disingenuous to describe him as a former Tory chancellor.
In those heady days, he's had a few positions within the Conservative Party. Anyway, no more. He has now kissed and made up, because he didn't used to be that there wasn't much praise coming from him towards Reform UK, but he's now joined Reform.
Yeah, that's right. So, as you say, a load of former jobs, former education secretary, cabinet office minister. He was vaccines minister during the rollout. So obviously, we saw him on our screens a lot during COVID and has now joined the Reform Party. So arguably the party's biggest defector so far. He said the UK had reached a dark and dangerous moment. The country needed, quotes, a glorious revolution, which he believes that Nigel Farage will be able to deliver. He revealed he'd let his membership of the Tory party lapse in December. But he'd been in talks with Reform for a very long time, since Nick Candy, the former Tory donor, had been in touch with Reform. And that's been for a number of months now. He said he was ready now to be a foot soldier to help Nigel Farage become Prime Minister. Here was him speaking about his defection at a press conference in Westminster this morning.
We can all see that our beautiful, ancient, kind, magical island story has reached a dark and dangerous chapter. Things may feel like they're ticking along just fine within a few square miles of where we stand today. But in so much of the rest of the country, the sickness is no surprise to anyone. To anyone trying to get a doctor's appointment, to anyone who wants to express an opinion, whether on X or even just down the pub, to anyone who wants their children to be taught facts, not harmful fictions at school, to anyone just trying to earn a living and not get crushed into the dirt by ever-growing taxes. Even if you don't yet realise that Britain needs reform, you know in your heart of hearts that our wonderful country is sick. How many of you at home have thought to yourselves that nothing works today? I know I have, and I have it a damn sight easier than most people. That is why I'm standing here today as the newest member of Reform UK.
And Asma, I think there were very many awkward moments at that press conference. And of course, when you've been around in British politics as long as the pair of them have, you've obviously been throwing insults at each other for a very long time, which have been less than savoury. Nigel Farage said a couple of years ago that Mr. Zahawi was climbing the slippery pole. Mr. Zahawi has accused him, Mr. Farage, in the past of racism and racist policies. He's even compared him to Goebbels. The pair, of course, laughing all of these off. I wanted to ask Mr. Farage that, bearing in mind those are some of the comments that they've said about each other in the past, whether he could trust Mr. Zahawi. And I said to Mr. Zahawi why he felt that Kemi Badenoch, the current Tory leader, did not have what it takes to become Prime Minister.
Boris Johnson decided to keep me on as Chancellor after his resignation. I think I've seen at close contact some of the pitfalls and the mistakes that Prime Ministers have made, and like Nigel, I'm not frightened of saying to my colleagues that we're making a mistake, and I hope it's something that, a value that Nigel identifies with. What was your second question?
Why do you not think that Kemi Badenoch
has? Well, if nothing else, she's got the baggage of what I think is a defunct brand, a brand that the nation has decided they can no longer trust. And of course, I don't think, in my view, she's able to form the next government. And ultimately, if you put country ahead of party, you come to the same conclusion, that the only person that you can really get behind and put the work and the energy into is Nigel Farage and his team.
And yes, he will be doing a big job for us, and all of that will be announced in the weeks to come. As for loyalty, well, if he's disloyal, you'll find that we deal with things very much more effectively in Reform UK. I don't see it being an issue, honestly, I don't. And that's the only thing I ever asked for. The only thing I ever asked for as leader, you know, in all the years I've done politics, the only thing I ask for is loyalty. If you want to disagree with me, you want to shout at me, you want to throw things at me, I really, really, really don't mind. But we do it behind closed doors. And it was so interesting at our conference up in Birmingham that we had the founder of Reform Canada come along, you know, and they went all the way from a tiny fringe party way out west in Canada to being the biggest party in Canadian politics, to Stephen Harper becoming the Prime Minister for 10 years. And that was the one thing that Preston Manning told us, is we had our arguments in private, and that's all I ask of anybody that comes. And we will have our disagreements. We won't see eye to eye on everything. No two human beings can. But they're the rules within this organisation. It's very, very straightforward.
There was also a very awkward moment where Mr. Zahawi...
Not another one.
I know.
That was awkward enough,
many.
Quite frankly.
It was very awkward enough, I know. Loyalty, you'll see what I mean when you're disloyal to me. I enjoyed that answer. When Mr. Zahawi was asked by a journalist about how he felt about a vaccine denier at addressing Reform's conference last year, which obviously lots of people had lots of thoughts about, and Mr. Zahawi was in charge of the vaccine rollout, so not an unfair question. Mr. Zahawi would not get into that. He just called the journalist's question stupid, said he had asked a very stupid question. You know, who says that Reform can't deal well with constructive criticism? So, like I say, many very awkward moments there. But it just goes to raise the question yet again, is the party just becoming washed up old Tories from Boris Johnson's government? Or are they gaining the experience that they need to potentially win the next general election? Depends how you see it, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. And also just Reform UK to form a government, what position might Nadeem Zahawi
occupy? That's a good question. Well, obviously he's got a lot of experience.
Obviously, could do a number of things.
He could do anything. He could get all of these jobs. I don't think he'll be getting Chancellor of the Exchequer. I think it's probably fair to say. I wonder if something, you know, Zahawi was very influential in the Conservative Party in fundraising. Mm-hmm. So maybe something like party chairman, getting more donations in, potentially something like that. But again, education secretary, maybe health secretary, who knows, he could maybe shape a more mainstream version of the vaccines policy for the Reform Party. He was also put those questions as well, the questions obviously which we've been hearing week in, week out about racism and allegations for Mr. Farage about that. Zahawi said, you know, if I thought that the man sitting next to me had in any way a problem with the people of my colour, I wouldn't be sitting next to him. However, of course, the other parties, as you'd expect, really getting involved in this latest defection. The Labour Party chair, Anna Turley, has said Zahawi is a disgraced politician, who has said this shameless scurry of yet another failed Tory over to reform will tell people everything they need to know about both of them. And the Liberal Democrat MP in his old constituency of Stratford-upon-Avon, Manuela Pertigella, has said the reform is becoming a retirement home for disgraced former Conservative ministers.
Goodness me, it's just awkward all round, isn't it? Natasha, thank you very much. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. We are going to talk about this after 3 o'clock. If you want to have a think, or perhaps you already have an idea of what you think about Nadeem Zahawi's defection to Reform UK, what does this mean, if anything, for the Conservatives? And what does it mean for Reform UK? Is that the big name you were expecting? Are the big names going to continue or not? You can get in touch after 3. At what point does Reform UK effectively become the Conservative Party rebranded? 0345 6060973. We'll talk about that after 3. After 2 o'clock, we are going to talk about London homicide rates record lows. I mean, they're still too high, obviously, but record lows, the lowest figure since 2014. How safe do you feel in London? But for the next 15 minutes or so, and I think probably after the break now, we are still asking you whether you trust Donald Trump to intervene in Iran. Would that make the world safer or more dangerous? It's fantastic that we've got so many Iranian listeners, people of Iranian heritage, who are calling in, who really know what is going on, what the history of that country, and of course, people who may have relatives who are there already. Do you trust Donald Trump to intervene in Iran? He's reportedly weighing up a range of options, not just military strikes, which of course would be the most extreme of those, but secret cyber weapons, widening sanctions, and providing online help to anti-government sources. Bob, what do you think? What do you think would actually happen? There are many people say, yes, get, you know, intervene, please, because the US is perhaps the only country with all its military might that Iran might fear, potentially. Please do something. And other people saying it will necessarily not make any difference, because you will go in there, you'll have some regime change, you'll have a different man at the top. What does that actually mean for the people in Iran who have been protesting, who have been opposing this particular regime for decades? Do you trust Donald Trump to intervene in Iran? 0345 6060973. Lots of you calling about this, and I'll get to you in a moment. It's 1:45.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
If you needed any further evidence that this government is way out of its depth, just look at what it decided to do yesterday. With Iran in the position in which it finds itself, with all the events that went on between the United Kingdom, the US and Russia, with Russia supposing almost like shadow ships coming in too close to British waters, with the effective seizing of Maduro in Venezuela, everything else going on in the world, only this government would decide to put out the Transport Secretary to talk about potholes.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor?
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least 2 yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
At Kia, we have an award-winning range of electric cars for you to discover. From the compact SUV, the Kia EV3, and our latest hatchback, the Kia EV4, to our stylish new Kia EV5, the all-electric family SUV. Discover what driving electric really means. And if you order any Kia electric car by March 31st, you'll enjoy your first 2 services free. Search Discover Your Kia EV to book your test drive today.
Kia.
Movement that inspires.
T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Asma Mia on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Looking at the messages, it doesn't feel like many of you without an Iranian heritage would trust Donald Trump to intervene in Iran. Variations on the same theme. Andy, I wouldn't trust Donald Trump to post a letter for me at lunchtime. Another one here. Lanice, I think it is. I wouldn't trust Donald Trump to tie my shoelaces, never mind intervene in any other country. And Beatrice said, funny in that clip, this is the clip we played around just after 1 o'clock. I thought Trump was talking about his own presidency, ruling through violence and allowing ICE to shoot innocent people in the face. Then I realised he is speaking of Iran and he doesn't compute how hypocritical he sounds. 0345 6060 973. Do you trust Donald Trump to intervene in Iran? Nima in Hounslow is Iranian. Do you trust him to intervene?
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, 100%. This government only understands strength, and I think Donald Trump is the guy to respond to them. I'm Iranian. My family, my people, my country have been held hostages at the moment in Islamic Republic. This regime in Tehran is not a government. This is a religious dealership. They use fears, execution, tortures, and so on. Women have been beaten for showing the hair. Protesters are shot in the street. Journalists are being imprisoned. Young people disappear. Families never got answers. I think the only possible option at the moment is Donald Trump. As I mentioned, I'm not a fan of him, but the only option is for him to intervene and stop them.
Okay, so explain how that would work. What would he do? What would they do? How would it change?
Definitely military action needed. As I said, people are dying. As all planets are aware of it now. In the last 4 days, they shut down the internet and treating us as an idiot. Yesterday, just released a footage, videos of youngest is dead on the floor. Can someone answer the question? How is that possible with no internet? Someone get access and post this on social media. So they're just trying to stop this revolution right now. I personally believe US and UK, nearly about 47 years ago, they seeded these, they planted this seed in Iran and brought these mullahs. This is just time to get rid of them.
But who would replace them?
At the moment, that's not the question. The question is nobody could be worse than them. No one. Let's just free the country first and then we'll decide. Let's have democracy. Let people vote who they want. I know lots and lots of people at the moment are just backing Prince Reza Pahlavi and saying he should. I personally backed him up. I agree. But let's just free the Iran, put the concentration on freeing the country at the moment with all the source they own, which is profitable even for US and UK, oil, gas, gold, you name it. Let's just make it safer for everyone. And then let's vote. Let the people decide.
I understand what you're saying. I think what's really stayed with me from your call is that you say anything is better than what's going on. But how likely is it that you can go from what's happening today, you know, decades of repression and everything you just talked about, you know, no democracy, no proper elections, to having a free and fair democratic vote? You know, there are so many vested interests in Iran. Would they actually let that happen?
Look, as I said, at the moment, they're sucking people's blood. They're taking our gold. They're taking our oil. They're taking everything. As you know, Russia and China are backing these mullahs up, and they have as they announced, they even receive application for the asylum, these leaderships, which is a good indicator. But they're doing it as it is. So nothing going to be worse than it is. At least people have freedom. It's just, it needs to happen. 50 years is enough.
Nima, thank you very much. Ali's in Kilburn. Hi, Ali.
Hi, Asma.
Do you agree with what Nima just said?
Partially. I mean, I understand that emotions are running high. I personally have real mixed feelings about this. I'm not a supporter of Donald Trump and his far-right policies by any means. And the example of Venezuela recently is a case in point, when he completely sidelined Maria Machado, the Nobel laureate, and completely ignored her and made a deal with Maduro's henchmen and women to run the country.
Yeah, so let's bring it back to Iran.
He's not by any means a reliable person, and even if he does intervene, which is questionable because who knows what Donald Trump is going to do, the price might be, too high. Who knows what he's going to ask for in return for doing Iranians a favor. However, as Nelson Mandela once said, you cannot fight a wild animal with bare hands. And Iranian people literally are fighting this murderous and torturous regime with bare hands. These people would not flinch at killing and torturing people ever. And it's a really complicated situation, as is often the case with these types of things.
Okay, Ali, I'm going to have to leave it there because your line is not great, but hopefully you feel that you got your point across. Beta, I think it is. There's a new caller in Barnet. Hi there.
Hello. I just wanted to make a comment on this, and I just really find it very intriguing that anybody that lives out here in the West, whether you're Iranian or not, we really shouldn't have the right to tell the people who are inside Iran, who are fighting this barbaric regime, facing, you know, war grade bits and weapons and are being killed in their masses. We don't have the right to tell them who is support they should be calling for. And I would just like to remind everybody that's opposing this that it was President Carter of the USA and the UK government who in 1979 helped rise the profile of the Ayatollahs and ultimately supported it in putting them in power inside Iran. So it is now complete justice that the people of Iran, who have risen up organically and have, you know, sparked this revolution, they are welcoming the support of President Donald Trump.
Okay, Beta, I'm afraid it was just a really bad line again. Not great luck here, but hopefully I understand what you were saying. Your basic point seemed to be that, you know, that people who are in this country don't necessarily have the right to be saying what should happen there. It's for the Iranian people themselves. And of course you are right. Pelumi, who's also a new caller in Swindon, what do you think about Donald Trump? Do you trust him to intervene?
I would not trust Donald Trump as far as I can throw him, which would not be very far, I'm afraid to say. I just want to put in, when people are saying, you know, we should intervene in this area, people need to remember that it's not just a simple matter of just sending in troops and people dying. You know, we need to have a plan, you know, before we have a repeat of what's happened in Somalia, before we have a repeat of what's happened in Iraq and in Libya. You know, if we go in and destabilize and, you know, enforce a regime change, if we don't have a plan as to how democracy can be brought back into this area, who is going to take over, how this is going to, you know, go forward in terms of government, then we're going to have a big mess in the area. And, you know, if we look at what's happened since when we went into to take out, the guy in Iraq, now we had the rise of ISIS from that. We did the same in Libya. Now we have the entire Sahel region of Africa being destabilized.
Okay.
My country, you know, Boko Haram has risen from just that, the guns that, you know, that they were looted from the Libyan armory is what's causing a lot of problem in Nigeria and most of Sahel region. So when people are saying, yes, let's go in, let's take these people out.
Well, Palimi,
think about the future.
Yeah, well, Palimi, I mean, we would hope that people who are weighing these kind of, you know, huge decisions will have a plan. Thank you for your point. Naveed, new caller, is in Hendon, also Iranian. What do you think, Naveed?
Hello, good afternoon. Regarding your question, I trust President Trump to take action against the Islamic regime. And I say with not happiness, but that's the only choice that we have. I mean, for more than 40 years, Iranian people have suffered. They protested peacefully, they tried patience, but nothing changed.
Mm.
And this Islamic regime only understand force and pressure. They do not listen to their own people. And do not forget, Iran is one of the richest countries in the world, but they destroyed the country. And I have to say that I don't care who comes after them. Any regime that comes after this one would be better. Because in the past 47 years, they brought every kind of trouble on the people. I can share my own experience that what happened to me in Iran. It happened to many people. So I lost my mother in Iran in around 7 years ago, and because her illness was untreatable, because we couldn't find her medicine in my country.
Wow.
So I had to buy medicine from the black market dealers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it cost, at that time, it cost 3,000 euros every month. And imagine for a country that average salary is around 500 euros. So people are fed up. That's the only option that they have. Yeah.
Naveed, thank you so much for calling, and I'm so sorry to hear about your mother and what happened and what you had to go through. But that's an illustration, really, of what people have to put up with. And, you know, would we be happy to put up with that? I don't think we would. Thank you so much for your calls. So many Iranian callers, and we are grateful to you because you know what is going on. In the next hour, I want to talk about London, whether you live here, whether you have lived here, whether you visited here as a tourist. How safe do you feel in London? This is not about what you might see on social media. It's about how you actually feel yourself on the streets of London. This is because London's murder rate has dropped to the lowest in more than a decade. There are other crimes, though, that are very much on the rise. But the Mayor of London is very happy to trumpet the fact that that rate is going in the right direction. So how do you feel? How safe do you feel in London?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 2 o'clock, Ofcom has opened a formal investigation into X over the use of its AI chatbot by users to make sexualised images. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has told LBC the government should push the regulator to go further.
Social media is a space for adults. It's not a space for children. And rather than banning X or whatever it is that the government is proposing, why don't we just get children out of this space? We don't ask nightclubs to serve orange squash so that the children there can have something to drink. We say no kids in nightclubs. That's what we should be doing here. We need to make sure that children are in spaces that are designed for them, not in adult spaces.
Malaysia and Indonesia have become the first countries to block Grok completely. The tech secretary, Liz Kendall, is due to update MPs this afternoon. Downing Street has played down the possibility of proscribing a branch of the Iranian armed forces as a terrorist organisation. Donald Trump has threatened military action in Iran over a crackdown on anti-regime demonstrations. It's believed 500 people have been killed in recent weeks. Daniela Saperi is an Iranian journalist and human rights activist. She's told LBC Donald Trump's intervention is not in the protesters' best interests.
What they want are not reforms. They want a regime change. They want stability, democracy, freedom. And the problem with Donald Trump is that on the one hand, he says that he wants to negotiate with the regime, but on the other hand, he wants to strike. So We are dealing with a U.S. president who is not sure what he wants to do himself. And this is making everything even more scary.
Former Conservative Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi has joined Reform UK. The former MP and minister says Britain really does need Nigel Farage as Prime Minister. A man who attacked a fellow train passenger with a glass bottle has been jailed for 12 years. 48-year-old Thomas Craig was found guilty of attempted murder after targeting the stranger and then his friend on a ScotRail service in 2024. And Kent County Council has declared a major incident with thousands of people without water, some for the second time in a matter of weeks. Southern and South East Water blame frozen pipes caused by the recent weather. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 3 points at 10,127. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with some outbreaks of rain moving northeast. Showers for southern and far northern Scotland. Drier later on, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Asma Mir.
Good afternoon to you. It is 4 minutes past two. This is Asma Mir sitting in for Sheila Fogarty today and tomorrow. And in this hour, we're going to talk about safety and specifically safety in London. How safe do you feel in London? There are two things at play here, I think, aren't there? The first one is the facts, which we will get into, because London's murder rate has dropped to the lowest in more than a decade. There are other crimes, of course, which are at much higher levels and are going in the wrong direction, and we will talk about them as well. Those are the facts. But there's also your perception. And perception itself can be split into two things, really. Perception can be how you actually feel on a daily basis, getting on the underground or getting on a bus or in your neighbourhood, and the perception that might be fed to you on social media. Because if I were to sit and watch, go onto the For You tab of X, I would be quite scared. I would think, goodness me, what is going on? And then I might feel more scared than I perhaps need to. But that's just what I think. I think that London, it depends where you live. It depends where you frequent. It depends on a lot of different things. But I'm interested to know if you live in London right now, if you've lived in London in the past, if you came to London at Christmas time or during the summer holidays, how safe do you feel in London? What was your actual experience? 0345 6060 973. The number of people, as I said, being killed in London has fallen to its lowest rate on record. Official figures show that there were 97 homicides in the capital last year, with 8 of those victims teenagers. Now, the progress is being put down to a mix of police enforcement and prevention programmes. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has this report.
Around 120 police officers are here, knocking down the doors of 8 different homes suspected of being linked to a gang on